directly, just directly ask Steve.
Oh, okay, whatever.
Talk about it.
Do you want to hear it?
We'll discuss. Bring to the agenda.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the City Council meeting, City of Arroyo Grande, for Tuesday, March 8th. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Dickens.
Here.
Councilmember Guthrie.
Here.
Councilmember Arnold.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Costello.
Here.
And Mayor Farrar.
Here as well. Our flag salute this evening will be led by Campfire USA Rainbow Forest. Welcome, everyone. And if you would remain standing for our invocation, Pastor Richard Charn is here to conduct our invocation.
Father in heaven, we invoke your blessing this evening as we meet together in fellowship and deliberation for the city of Arroyo Grande, California. We come this evening in gratitude and praise for the privilege of being here and being Americans. Help us not to take for granted the freedom, liberties, justice, our flag, our nation, and the diversities of our people. May we work together in harmony and unity to accomplish for our community the high standard of morals that makes for safety and to bless our generation and the generations to come. Please grant to all those on our council and those in authority in our state and in our nation wisdom and sound judgment in each and every decision which they are called upon to make. Our prayer tonight would be for the protection and guidance given to those that are serving in the armed forces of our great nation under God, at home and around the world. And may they know our love and appreciation for their sacrifice and willing service to our country. We ask for your grace and power and wisdom for those who serve positions of responsibility and are giving their time even tonight in the City Council. Thank you for being mindful of us all and guiding our lives in righteousness. Be the Lord of each of our lives and of all that we do. Give us this day our daily bread and forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom and the glory and the power forever and ever. We praise you, our Redeemer and friend. Amen. You may be seated.
Thank you, Pastor. Don't go too far, ladies. I'm going to ask you to come back up in just a quick second here. This takes us to item 5, our special presentations. I have 3 of them this evening. I'll step down from the dais and administer those. Okay, the first one, it's my privilege this evening to present an honorary proclamation recognizing Absolutely Incredible Kid Day, March 17th, 2005. And I understand that, ladies, you're going to come up and receive this, so if you would, please come up here. All 3 of you can. It's okay.
You can move a little closer. I won't find you.
Especially if you have goodies. Okay, well, I'm going to read this, and then I'm going to ask you to receive this on behalf of the City Council, and then we'll ask you to say a little bit. Commended for the valuable programs offered to young people in the city of Arroyo Grande and throughout the nation, and for the many services these young people perform for their communities through Campfire. Now, therefore, be it resolved that I, Tony Ferrara, Mayor of the City of Arroyo Grande, on behalf of the City Council, do hereby proclaim March 17, 2005, as absolutely an incredible Kid Day in the City of Arroyo Grande, and we urge all adults to participate in Absolutely Incredible Kid Day by sending letters to express feelings and appreciation to young people in their lives and making a difference in the life of a child. So, ladies, it's my pleasure to present this to you tonight. Who's going to take it? You?
Okay. Did you want to say something about some of the activities in Sherman? You're going to give me this? Okay.
I'm Kaylee, and I would like to present you with some stationery to write letters to incredible kids you know. You can mail it, put it on a pillow, or in a lunchbox.
Great. Thank you. Wow. Thanks. I think we're getting the better deal.
I'm Crystal, and I would like to present you with campfire candy as a token for our appreciation for allowing us to present information about Absolutely Incredible Kid Day.
Very good.
I'm Natalie, and I would like to encourage every adult to write a letter of love, support, and appreciation to a child on March 17th. Thank you from the Rainbow Forest Campfire Club.
Okay. Well, we all have our marching orders. We know what to do now, right? Okay. Thank you. Okay, at this time, I would like to ask Larry Womack to step up. Good evening, Larry.
Good evening, Mayor. Welcome. Thank you.
It's my pleasure this evening to present an honorary proclamation recognizing March 2005 as American Red Cross Month. Whereas America has been a place of humanitarian action and compassion, a place where people take care of each other and are always willing to reach out and take care of others in need, whether they are down the block or around the globe, that American desire to put our compassion into action is deeply rooted in the character of San Luis Obispo County. And whereas for more than 88 years, the Red Cross in San Luis Obispo County has been the place where citizens join together and the generosity and compassion of the American people finds purpose. It's been the place where someone who may not know you will still give you their time, money, and life-saving skills, save you from drowning, or provide you with shelter. Never has this been more evident than these past few years when the San Simeon earthquake wreaked havoc on our community and a deadly tsunami struck our neighbors in Asia and Africa. San Luis Obispo County responded swiftly and generously, and in overwhelming numbers chose their Red Cross as the place to turn their caring into action. And whereas recognizing that suffering knows no borders, the Red Cross provides assistance during international emergencies such as the tsunami. They have also spearheaded a campaign to immunize millions of African children against measles and a disease nearly forgotten in America, but a deadly killer in other parts of the world. And whereas in America we may not all look, dress, or sound the same, but we share a common spirit that binds us together when times are tough and unites us in action when someone is suffering. Like a mirror on America, the Red Cross shows us the best possible reflection of ourselves. In celebrating America Red Cross Month, we are celebrating the humanitarian and volunteer spirit here in San Luis Obispo County and all across America. Now therefore be it resolved that I, Tony Ferrara, Mayor of the City of Arroyo Grande, on behalf of the City Council, do hereby proclaim March 2005 as American Red Cross Month, and we urge all Americans to continue to volunteer their time and give generously to the American Red Cross. So it's my pleasure to present this to you. Larry, would you like to say a few words?
Absolutely. I just wish to thank Mayor Ferrara and the Council for taking this time to recognize the American Red Cross. And as the American Red Cross, and in particular here in San Luis Obispo County, is a volunteer-led organization, I want to accept this on behalf of the hundreds of volunteers.
Actually, our city manager was the catalyst behind initiating something that the council was wholeheartedly in support of. It's something called a Platinum Service Club. And this is a way in which the council can recognize outstanding service performed by the employees here at the city. And so this evening, it's my pleasure to present a commendation to Ryan Foster, and I'll give you just some quick background. We're recognizing Ryan this evening. He came on board in 2000, the year 2000, as a Cal Poly intern, and began working in community development. And in 2003, he was hired as a full-time assistant planner. And besides the great job that he's done in his planning position, he's taken on a key additional responsibility that has had a major impact on our city. As an intern, Ryan took the initiative to put his computer technical skills to use by redesigning the city's website. Ryan has since redesigned the website using the latest technology and serves as the city's webmaster. The original website was also hosted by an outside vendor at significant cost to the city. Ryan was instrumental in the setup of a web server within the city's existing computer network, eliminating the need for the outside vendor. And so Ryan's contributions have resulted in the savings of thousands of dollars that would have otherwise been necessary to design and continue to manage our website. And also, Ryan's efforts resulted in the system that has been complemented, and I can attest to this because I hear it all the time from my colleagues throughout the state. Our website is one of the best city websites. That's a quote. Greatly improved the city's public outreach, very important public education, and customer services program. So, Ryan, it's my pleasure this evening to present you with two things, actually. The first is a mayor's commendation on this eighth day of March 2005 in recognition of your membership in the Platinum Service Club and for service above and beyond the call of duty. Congratulations. Well, don't go away just yet. There's something else here. And it has a McClintock's insignia on it, the brand. There's also a note here that says, when you open this, there's enough to cover the mayor. So take him with you. So. Thank you. Did you want to say a few words?
Sure, just that okay. I really appreciate this recognition on behalf of the council. And I really enjoy playing around with computers and keep your eye open because I've got a lot more features that I want to implement here in the next couple of months. So continually trying to improve what we've already got.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay. That takes us to item 6. Agenda review, move that all resolutions and ordinances presented tonight be read in title only and all further readings be waived.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion carries. Takes us to item 7, community comments and suggestions. This is an opportunity for any member of the audience to come forward and comment on items that are not published on this evening's agenda. The Brown Act prohibits the council from taking any action on matters that are not published on the agenda. We would ask that if you do come forward, please limit your comments to 3 minutes or less and address the council as a whole. Anyone who would like to come forward at this time?
Good evening.
Good evening, Colleen.
Colleen Martin, 855 Olive Street in Aurora Grande. First off, I wanted to thank the council for your kindness in the last month and for your dedication of the February 8th meeting on behalf of my father, Mike Titus. It meant a lot to my mother and I. Secondly, I did want to congratulate Ryan Foster because I think your website is phenomenal. And if it weren't for tonight's quick action on your website, I wouldn't be able to come forward to read a few things from past minutes. The minutes are in detail from 2000 on, which I found just astounding. So the website's awesome, Ryan. Great job. And I'm here tonight really briefly just because I know it's coming up to you at some point to remind you in our general plan update, which was in October of 2001, which I was pretty intimately involved with as a member of the core group and head of the survey, that part of the general plan requires that Parcel 7E, which is the neighborhood out where East Cherry and Branch Mill Road, of you, some of you were here, but not all of you, to 2.5 units per acre, not the 4.5 units that were adopted that night. Every single city councilman spoke on 7E that night. And when they spoke, they had reservations about a medium density. Many of them did, including our mayor. Consultant Strong, this is on October 9, 2001. Consultant Strong replied that the current general plan and land use zoning on the property includes one-acre lots, and many of the existing lots are in excess of 1 acre. He said the proposed land use designation, the general plan, would be single-family residential medium density with a required neighborhood plan. He said the neighborhood plan would be a prerequisite to any subdivision or parcel map. Under the general plan, he said there would be a future consideration of development code zoning amendments that would enable single-family medium-density development. So he was saying, Mr. Strong was saying, the neighborhood plan would be adopted first before any development could happen in that area. And lastly, Councilmember Lubin had said that he said that in the discussions with several of the property owners, it appeared that the majority of the land would not be redeveloped and it would stay as it is today. He stated he was comfortable with that designation because he had met with so many of the property owners, which, of course, we now know is not what we're proposing. So I ask you to please visit the October 9, 2001 minutes on your website. Look through page 9 and on for where we're... Every single council member was talking about 7E, and Rob Strong, the consultant at the time, was saying that a neighborhood plan would have to be adopted prior to any development out there. And I ask you to follow with that, and I agree with that, that a neighborhood plan is the first step to any development out there prior to any development. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Anyone else? Okay, seeing no one, we will close community comments and suggestions. That will take us to item 8, consent agenda. This is a group of items that the council normally approves in one action. We've had an opportunity to review these items in detail. There is an opportunity for individual council members to pull an item from the consent agenda for further clarification, discussion, and a separate action if they so desire. I have a couple this evening. Does anyone else?
Yeah, I do too.
Okay.
I'd like to pull E and F.
Okay. How about over here?
I've been saying too.
Okay. I wanted to pull D, E, and F. So with that, I will entertain a motion for approval of consent items 8A through 8F with the exception of D, E, and F.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Anything to read in there?
No, Ms. Brandt.
Okay. Any further discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Costello?
Yes.
And Mayor Farrar?
Yes, thank you. 8D, consideration of an amendment to the SHA-STP Cooperative Agreement with San Luis Obispo Council of Governments. Don, I didn't have an opportunity to talk to you directly, but I did mention this to Steve earlier today. In fact, it was on good old Interstate 5, winding my way back from Sacramento. My comment to Steve was that not a lot of the detail gets to the SLOCOG board, particularly as it relates to agreements such as these. So I just wanted to get a better understanding of what this agreement entails. So if you could just, you know, give just a quick thumbnail sketch of the sum and substance of this agreement.
We have several of these. We have cooperative agreements that we approve from time to time regarding the reimbursement of funds that we've applied for different projects. And I think that's exactly what this is. It applies to, this gives a rundown of various projects that we've done over the years, but basically involves the projects that are presented in the back, A9, 14, A15, A16, and A17. And it talks about the funding, what will be reimbursed to the city, and so forth. I have James Worthley from SLOCOG here, too, to answer any questions that you might have as well. This money, the $165,000, was in the 2002 STIP because that money no longer existed. SLOCOG decided to still fund the project and put it into the regional state account. And so that's why it comes out of that particular account. But it's fully funded on the amount that they had previously approved.
Okay, and can you finish out the column there, or the row, I guess?
The local funding of 150.
Local funding, 150,000, and?
And the total would be 315 is what the amount that's shown for this particular project. As you know, that wasn't the complete amount. When we awarded the contract was for something slightly higher than that, and additional money came out of the local funding source, our city funding source.
Okay, and what is the current status in terms of funding and the progression of activity on the PA and ED?
The PA and ED, as you can see, has been funded, and we're starting. We awarded the contract. We're going to be having the first project development team meeting fairly soon in the next month or so. So that's progressing. The next phase of the project, which is the plan, specs, and cost estimates, they will be included or proposed to be included in the STIP for 2006. And as far as the construction goes, which that's the next phase, that'll be in the 2008 STIP if funding is available.
I think that status has changed. Right, James? We'll get to that a little bit later.
So that's the game plan right now.
Okay. Okay. You didn't have to make a special trip down. Okay. No, I just wanted some clarification on the status of this agreement. Because we sometimes deal with broader funding issues, and so the specifics of how some of these cost estimates relate to individual projects sometimes doesn't get clarified.
Yeah, and this is the real nuts and bolts, what happens after those decisions, you're right. Yeah.
Okay. Any questions? All right. Thank you. Appreciate that, Don. Don't go too far. All right, the next item is 8E. Consideration of a resolution approving the pavement cut policy. Councilmember Arnold?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Don, in here there were a couple of questions that I had. One, it talked about studies that had been performed in Los Angeles and San Francisco and Sacramento that concluded that degradation occurs no matter how well the excavation is restored. My question is, at what point, how do you stop that from occurring? I mean, if a new overlay is done, that then degradation still can occur. I guess my confusion is if you cut a road, do you have to completely remove the road if you ever want to stop it from repairing it. Does that make sense?
Well, I think what we're talking about here is specifically those individual trench cuts, those two-foot sections that are cut in a new road or any road that over time degrade and cause potholes and those sorts of things. It's a very narrow section. It gets a continual wheel loading from cars and trucks that come over it. The water gets between the cracks and degrades the underlying base of that asphalt. And what we're trying to do here is, one, we're trying to prevent or at least limit the amount of cuts that go in the pavement. And when they do, there's a section in the policy that requires them to put it back in accordance with our special pavement cut repair, which is much larger than a two-foot section. For instance, they'll be required to grind the asphalt on 10 feet on either side of these cuts so that we have a broader area to carry the load from cars and trucks and those sorts of things. So we've kind of modified that detail in the event that there's a real need to cut the pavement.
Okay, that was the question, because there were obviously multiple studies done, and there were other ones that I didn't mention where they had showed the degradation, but then the three that I specifically mentioned, they said no matter how well they repaired, but in those scenarios, they were not doing what we're going to propose as this extra special repair.
That's correct.
So that should then bring the road back up to a new condition.
Hopefully it'll keep it to the condition of the rest of the surrounding area.
And the other question, this would not apply to the micro-surfacing that is being proposed on a lot of our roads. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah, that's correct.
Was there any thought about how...
We'll contact that person or owner during the design phase to try to stub out some utilities that may potentially be used. So we're trying to work ahead of the schedule with developers and people who own property, that sort of thing. So we didn't want to put that in here specifically, but this is just a policy, and during the approval process by the council, in the event that there's a situation like this, I think we'd put that into the staff report so that the council was aware of it and so that the council could make that determination at that time.
Okay. So how many roads are we actually looking at where this policy would truly go into effect, considering, you know, you've given us a very thick book of all our roads, and obviously most of them are all scheduled. So how many roads are we really talking about that are going to be affected? Because I didn't see overlay as a repair for most of the roads that we have. We're talking about this micro-surfacing.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's not going to affect, we're only talking about a few new roads, aren't we? I mean, which would be where the new development's already taken place then.
Right. I mean, we're talking about our major roads, our major arterials, our collector streets, and those types of roads, Grand Avenue, Tally Ho, Fair Oaks. Those are the streets that we're mainly concerned with, because they get the most traffic and the most pounding, and the road tends to deteriorate quicker when we have cuts in those roads.
Are the stub-outs that are necessary at Cortland and Grand, is everything there that would be needed for the S&S project? So they're stubbed out now, so we wouldn't be destroying that road.
Hopefully, we will not be able to. I mean, depending on the ultimate design, but we attempted to provide stub outs for them, and we did it for the bank as well on the other side of the street, San Jose Bank.
Okay. That's all,
Mr. Mayor. Okay. Any other comments or questions on 8E? Okay, we're going to move to 8F. And this is sort of in the same area, Don. This is the pavement management program. And beginning on page 30 of the document, 30, 31, carrying over to 32, you've got what amounts to a five-year pavement management plan. And as Councilmember Arnold indicated, this is, for the most part, for lack of a better term, a preemptive strike in the form of slurry seal or micro-surfacing. Is that pretty much correct?
That's correct, yeah.
Okay. My concern is the amount of money that we have programmed for the pavement management plan, that preemptive strike, if you will. And, you know, this comes up quite often whenever we take a look at this, but I think the problem has become somewhat exacerbated on a couple of our streets. And I guess what I'm looking for is some potential, and I spoke with Steve, and I think we're going to take a look and see what funding is available. Mm-hmm. But what concerns me are the segments that the roadway segments that you have under corrective maintenance projects, which is defined on the bottom of page 32 and then carries over to page 33. There are a couple in here that I had checkmarked in discussing this with Steve earlier today, indicated that they were at the top of the list as far as capital improvements, which is a good thing. Mm-hmm. Namely, Briscoe, and I see where the confusion was here. There's two entries, Steve, for Briscoe. One from El Camino to Linda Drive. The other one is Briscoe East Grand Avenue to Linda Drive. So you've got those two separated out. That's where the initial confusion was. And then the other one that I had checked was Farrell Avenue, particularly with the most recent rains. That street is becoming extremely hazardous and very difficult to keep repairing those potholes. Mm. So I'm looking at a way in which we can ensure that we can attend to those, at least those two priorities, and this would be maybe something that we want to bring back to the council. Mm-hmm. To see if everyone's in sync with this. But I guess my concern is, if there are some segments in the pavement management plan that can wait another year and we can redirect enough money to cover at least a couple of the corrective maintenance projects that perhaps can't wait another year. Mm-hmm. And those two in particular, I think, are extremely, are deteriorating to an extreme mm-hmm. degree. And particularly Farrell Avenue and that one segment of Briscoe. So,
as I say, the first step in identifying those streets that need corrective action. So I think you've identified them. They're on the list, and then we'll take it from there into the next step of the capital improvement program.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, with that.
Mr. Mayor, I think Jim had something.
I think I did too. But
I'm sorry, Jim, go ahead.
All right. Yeah, I actually have some comments when we get to this section on some of the priorities as well. But specifically and I talked to you about this earlier, the federal government's definition for collector and arterial and minor arterial at some points are in conflict, for instance, with our model. And in other places with our general plan. And so I was asking, and I realize I asked you earlier, the specifics of how the highway, the federal highway definitions are arrived at. I think that when we prioritize, when we get to it, we can adjust for the fact that we have certain roads that, while they may or may not fit a certain definition, actually have higher traffic use or are more important in our development scheme than perhaps the RS spelled out here by the federal highways. I do think that we need to just be aware of that as we're going forward, that this is just a way of matching up with the federal definition mm-hmm. so that we don't have three and four. In fact, you gave me this list earlier. There's actually some roads have three different definitions when you look from the general plan to the model to, in fact, this definition. So I think it is a good idea going forward that we arrive at one designation. And then when we're looking at our priorities, we can account for what might be a local phenomenon or local change based on that.
Okay, any other comments?
I have one. I just want to thank you for this report. I've actually mm-hmm. been getting some phone calls asking when are we going to fix this road and whatnot. And for a report as extensive as this, it was actually quite easy to use. So I did want to commend you on the work.
Well, thank you. I hope the maps in the back help as well.
Thank you.
Pictures always help, Don. You know us. Okay, with that, I'll entertain a motion for approval of consent items 8D, 8E, a resolution of the City Council of the City of Arroyo Grande adopting a pavement cut policy, and 8F, a resolution of the City Council of the City of Arroyo Grande adopting the City of Arroyo Grande Public Works Department pavement management program.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Mayor Pro Tem Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
And Mayor Farrar?
Yes. Thank you. That takes us to item 9, public hearings. Our first public hearing this evening, 9A, consideration of renaming Cortland Street to North Cortland Street and South Cortland Street.
Good evening again, Mr. Mayor and members of the City Council. Recent development along Cortland Street has brought to light the need for a north and south designation along the street in order to be consistent with the city's addressing system, therefore ensuring timely and accurate emergency response. With this system, streets that cross East Grand Avenue are split into north and south, starting with the 100 block on either side of East Grand Avenue. Main difference between north and south designations is that the north designations place odd numbered addresses on the west side of the street and even addresses on the east side. For the south side of the street, these number placements are flipped. I've actually highlighted a portion of the city's water system atlas to illustrate this system, which includes the recently approved Cortina de Arroyo Grande Senior Apartments north of East Grand Avenue along Cortland Street, and Jasmine Place, which is on Cortland Street south of East Grand Avenue.
Ryan, you might want to see if you can enlarge that a little bit. You can make the magic machine work.
I realize it's probably a little hard to read.
Zero in, maybe.
Yeah, I was thinking maybe you could zoom. There you go. All the way in.
There you go. Okay.
I'll just describe what this shows in case it's difficult to read. The blue is Cortland Street, and the yellow areas highlight the two projects that I mentioned, plus it shows that
East Grand and then have it switch at, or I mean East Cortland and switch at Grand to South Cortland instead of having the actual designation of South and East in front of it.
Yeah. You mean only have a South Cortland and then north of Grand?
Have a Cortland. And then, because as you mentioned, unlike other roads across East Grand Avenue, Elm Street, Halcyon, Cortland Street does not have a north-south designation. So I assume what you meant is they break on Grand Avenue, but it'd be like 200 North Cortland and 200 South Cortland.
Correct.
Is it because we'd have to change all the actual physical numbers of the parcels if we try to do that now?
If we didn't do the north and south, then some existing or perhaps the Jasmine Place addresses would have to be out of sync with the surrounding context. And it's basically laid out on a grid throughout the city, which makes it easier for police and fire to respond if they know it's the 300 block of North Elm Street or the 200 block of South Halcyon. They know that they have to turn on Grand Avenue to get one or the other. So it would be looking at where the projects are and consistency with the adjacent properties, there's a strong possibility that we'd have two of the same addresses on Cortland if we didn't designate north and south.
So this is, as you feel, the simplest solution, not trying to change?
It's the simplest solution as approved by the police chief and the fire chief.
Thanks. Any questions?
Just so I understand it, this would then correspond to Elm Street, for instance. The first block of North Elm is equal to the first block of North Cortland.
I don't believe there'd be a 100 block of North Cortland because that's all East Grand Avenue frontage. Okay. Back until the point where it would transition to the 200 block.
Okay. Okay, so the second, okay.
Yeah.
All
right.
Well, I had a similar question about the Jasmine Place numbering. If we were to look at, say, Elm and Ash,
mm-hmm.
if you were to go one block towards Grand North, I guess, on Elm, is that the 200 block there?
It's the...
The reason why I ask is because... For obvious reasons, I'm very familiar with that area, but what you don't clearly see is that coming off of Grand Avenue on Cortland, there's at least there's three blocks before you get to Jasmine Place, which would constitute, I think, the fourth block, but yet the numbering system is in the 200s. Why is that?
I believe it's because as you go south on Elm Street, those numbering systems where you start with the 100 block and then transition to the 200 block were bigger blocks. When Berry Gardens was developed, it's got like Raspberry and Blackberry, and those were much smaller blocks. And most of the properties in there, in fact, I think all of them until Jasmine Place, don't have Cortland addresses. But by the time you get to that portion of Cortland, if you look parallel over to east or south Elm Street, it would be... adjacent to the 200 block, and that's as shown on the bottom. Yeah, those are all in the 200s on South Elm Street.
And my initial reaction to that was that maybe this was a bit of overkill, since for that entire stretch of what would now become South Cortland, there's only four houses that front Cortland. Every other home in that development. Has an address on an intersecting street. So there's only four houses there with numbers on them that face Cortland. My other question, Ryan, is that the senior housing development north in this area, mm-hmm. How is the addressing system going to work for that development? Is it going to be one address with unit designations?
Yes, I believe it's 241 Cortland, and each level of apartments will begin with 1, 2, 3 and have suite numbers for each apartment.
Okay, my question is if this is going to be one address in the 200s and we made it something different than what these two houses are down here, then we would not have any duplication because the houses farther up on Cortland are in the 300s. There are no 300 south.
That's correct. We could number them differently without the north and south. That was discussed, and the fire chief and police chief both felt that it would be in the best interest to designate north and south for potential future.
We're going to table that motion for a moment. This is a public hearing. And so thank you for reminding me. I'm still a little punchy from the drive. But if there are members of the audience that would like to come forward and comment on 9A, this would be an opportunity for you to do so. No one? Okay. Close the public hearing portion. Now we'll get back to the motion. Is there a second?
I'll second the motion.
Okay. Thank you. Any discussion? We have a motion and a second. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Costello?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Thank you. That'll take us to 9B, continued public hearing, consideration of general plan amendment 04-003, housing element.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. The City Council expressed support of the proposed amendments to the housing element at the previous hearing, but continued the item in order to research the possible implications of SB 1818 on housing element policies and also to clarify the League of California Cities' position on this legislation. What staff learned from the League is that their Housing, Community, and Economic Development Policy Committee is working with the California Builders Industry Association to draft legislation that is intended to replace the current regional housing needs assessment process with a more regional approach. This ultimately would allow cities and counties to plan for their own growth based on available resources. Details of the draft proposal are in your packet, but in summary, each local jurisdiction would prepare a 10-year housing specific plan based on land use, circulation patterns, and infrastructure planning. The proposal still has a ways to go and will likely not be considered by the state until around the end of the year. If this new legislation is approved, it is anticipated to go into effect in July of 2008. So regarding SB 1818, the League's analysis appears to support staff's interpretation that the density bonus provisions will not impact the city's inclusionary housing requirements, although this will ultimately require some additional clarification and possibly some court interpretation. So that said, staff recommends approval of the proposed amendments to the housing element tonight by adopting a resolution approving General Plan Amendment 04-003. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, I'll jump in here since it was my request that we take a pause and chase down some additional information to determine whether or not there was some relevancy. And we didn't have to go too far for the source. John Scholes, mayor of Grover Beach, sits on the committee that you indicated is working with the League. So, and I know we have to go to public comment, but I just wanted to make the statement that you know, the landscape is moving so quickly in this whole housing arena right now. The proposal that Kelly described is certainly not final. There are a lot of issues with it that need to be worked out before it can be finalized and before it garners the entire support of the League. So I'm okay with moving ahead with this as long as there's some provision for us to check back in and review and evaluate sooner than the normal general plan element review period. And I'm thinking of maybe 2 years that we come back and revisit and update, again, based on the activity that's just spinning wildly out there with regard to housing.
We would also propose monitoring, you know, both the legislation and then anything that changes with SB 1818. And if we find changes, we'll come back, you know, at that point with possible recommended modifications.
Okay. Any other comments or questions on 9B?
I had one that I think will dovetail into what you just mentioned. Steve and I had a chance to talk today, and my understanding, talking to you, Steve, was that if we do find that SB 1818 is causing us more grief than we're anticipating, that we do have the right to modify this document. That is correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So just that was a concern that I also had, so thank you.
Okay. This is a public hearing. If there are members of the audience who would like to come forward, comment on 9B.
We've had a number of, has no density offset. All that money has to be swallowed by the market rate unit. I understand that the League doesn't agree with the interpretation of HCD. I've been through this process with other government agencies. They generally believe that SB 18 overrides what you can do. So as I've said before, what they did is they created a separate inclusionary program that gave a different set of incentives to get a different kind of housing mix. But builders are going to choose SB 1818. It's really a shame, no offense to the city attorney, that everyone thinks we need to go to court to get this resolved. The law is pretty clear. It doesn't say shall. It says you will grant what they propose. And the advantage from your point of view is if you want affordable housing, is builders will do it that way. But if you make them really spend a lot of money on affordable housing, you're going to make market rate housing cost more. And I don't know if you read the Reason report. What it shows is that investors and landowners pulled out of the housing process when inclusionary housing laws made the process onerous. So I just don't think that you, even if you can change it, there's really no need to go down that way if you have the law on the books now that says this is what you need to do to get affordable housing. And we can live with it. But, you know, we have not, as an association, we haven't gone up and down the two counties that we deal with and yelled and screamed about SB 1818. We've been willing to accept that as a reasonable solution. So, anyway, that's my point of view. Last thing I wanted to say on that, and I know I go by 3 minutes, but last time you had a lot of discussion about the concessions in SB 1818, and it always concerns me when I hear that discussion because I really worry that everyone thinks that builders want to throw out all the development standards, which is not true. The builders live here. They built the homes you guys all live in. They love the community. What we're talking about is when you have a project and you want to get 20 apartment units on it, and you want to make that a good project, you make it look good, make nice units for people, and you have to put 60 parking places on there, I'm choosing a number arbitrarily, and we can show you that there's an advantage to putting 54, that's the kind of concession we'd be talking about, is find a way to compromise, find a way to cooperate so that we can get affordable housing for that you might want, and we can still make projects that make financial sense. As a banker friend of mine says, my final comment is, if it doesn't make dollars, it won't make sense. And it has to pencil out. So thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments. Anyone else? Okay. Seeing none, we will close the public hearing portion of 9B and bring this back. Councilmember Dickens, why don't you start this one for us?
Certainly, Mr. Mayor. I had no problems with adopting this last time. I think that that some of the comments that have been thrown out there are certainly one organization's opinions, but I really believe that that what we have before us is a product of a long, involved process. We've had the local community members involved with our task force to help generate this particular document. It's gone through several revisions from HCD, and I think it's time that we adopt what we have. I think that if there were problems, those should have been voiced a long time ago in regards to our inclusionary housing. It's my opinion that it's a must for us to require inclusionary housing as part of our element. Before we had inclusionary housing, we did not have a development community that was coming forth with affordable housing, and so it's imperative that we provide that type of requirement and work with the projects to make them work. So I have no problems moving forward with what we have before us this evening. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Arnold.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I too can I accept the housing element as proposed tonight. I really do hope that we are not forced to live by the SB 1818 rules. I find it interesting that they talk about affordable housing, yet the changes to SB 1818 really actually cut the number of affordable units that were required to be built by builders. So I think that, you know, all the talk that all the expense of housing is the city's fault, if we could open up the books of a lot of the builders in this town, I think we'd find that they're making a lot more than a reasonable profit. So I do not like the fact that the state is micromanaging at the local level. But unfortunately, that's a reality that we have to live with right now. So I will accept this, and I hope that we can keep a very close eye on what's going on. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Guthrie.
Yeah. We've reviewed this a lot of times. I've read it so many times now that I have trouble keeping track of all the changes. But I'm not quite as afraid of SB 18 or whatever the number is that some people are. I don't see it as that significantly different than the voluntary options that were available to developers before it came forward, slightly smaller requirements. I don't think any of them are going to exercise it unless they're forced to anyway. And I think that that is exactly what we're building into our housing element is a requirement for affordable housing. There may be some unintended consequences to that requirement and therefore those concessions that we've expressed concern about. I do think there have been a number of developments that, in fact, either intentionally or unintentionally, didn't result in good results in different neighborhoods, and therefore I think the concern about the concessions is legitimate. But I can certainly move forward with what we propose tonight, and if there are consequences from the state going forward, then we'll have to adjust to that, as will many other cities. So I'm not concerned about moving forward with it as it is.
Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I've got no problem adopting the measure before us, and I too don't share the same concerns with SB 1818 that I keep hearing. Let's go back to what we're talking about. We're talking about inclusionary housing from the city standpoint. We're talking about SB 1818 providing density bonuses that are a little bit more liberal than what we have on our books. What's the point of that? The point is to try to put affordable housing into the stock here so that we'll have affordable housing for the people in this community to live in. And when you start to analyze exactly what that means, and there was an article in one of the papers this past couple of weeks, talked about $315,000 houses where we can't find people to qualify to live in them because you have to have a maximum income of $74,000. I crunched some numbers, and at $315,000, and I've got the numbers here, but at $315,000, if you have a 95% mortgage, you're going to end up spending, at the current rates that are out there, something around 32% of your income on your housing, which is more than what we like to see. So even at the rates that we're talking now, it's going to be really tough. I think that $315,000 house needs to be about a $295,000 house. And even that only brings the monthly down about $100 a month. What we're trying to accomplish here, though, is to get some affordable housing into the mix. SB 1818, although it does call for concessions, I'm going to go right to the language of it, and I'll ask that staff is going to have to be very perseverant in any project that comes before us that falls into this. Has built into it language that says that a concession or incentive would have to have a specific adverse impact to be denied, or the concession or incentive is not required in order to provide for affordable housing costs. So if a builder comes to us and says, here's a project I want to do, but I need these concessions to make it work, well, fine, prove it to us. And if it pencils out that you have to have the concessions to make it work and we're going to get the affordable housing, then I think it's in our own best interest to look at granting those concessions anyway. If they're not reasonable, if the concessions that are being asked for don't make the project pencil out, that they're just an excuse to get a couple extra units that aren't going to be affordable, well, we've got the opportunity to deny that concession anyway. It's built into the law. I think we can work with the law as it's written, and we're going to experience this as we go through. We've got the opportunity to revisit our policy later on. I've got no problem going forward with this, so I can support this, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. I think Councilmember Dickens and myself were the only two remaining members of this council, at least, that were involved in the, at least from the council's perspective, the deliberation on the original housing element as part of the general plan update. And I can recall the issue of affordable housing coming up and the affordable housing advocates who stood at this podium, People Self-Help Housing, a few other organizations that were adamant about inclusionary housing. And I think Jim can recall they were saying, we don't care how you do it, just get the housing stock on the ground, forget about the in-lieu fees. Just a kind of a sidebar on the in-lieu fees. The you know, I'm thinking at this point to the degree that in-lieu fees have some relativity to the redevelopment area, that there might be some way in which we can in the future make some kind of viable move towards an organized affordable housing effort. But beyond that, the fund that would collect the in-lieu fees was never substantial enough for us to do much with. On the other hand, we could do something with inclusionary housing. The difficulty for us, and I understand what's happening at Jasmine Place right now, the difficulty for us is trying to, and we have not resolved the problem, is how do we sell these homes and still meet the challenge of maintaining them at an affordable level without directly impacting the financial future of the buyers who settle into those homes. That's been the challenge for us. When we start talking about how much appreciation goes to the city as opposed to the owner of the property, it is a difficult area. But I think we need to back up and we need to look at how we got there originally. And we were trying to come up with something that would combat what we saw happening, not only on a limited basis, thank God, in Arroyo Grande, but it was certainly happening in Pismo, and it was certainly happening to some degree in Grover, where there would be inclusionary housing, supposedly affordable housing, put into a development, and those homes were purchased by any number of individuals in the building industry, in the real estate division, or in the real estate industry as spec homes. So they bought them at a low rate and then wound up selling them at a market rate. So those kinds of things happened, and as a result of that, we're still trying to figure out a way to lock a rate in that's fair for everyone, and it's difficult. It's extremely difficult. But I have to agree with my colleagues. Still, when we start looking at a mechanism to maintain our workforce here in the city for as long as they want to stay employed in the city, I think inclusionary housing and the system that we have is the only option available to us, at least right now. Hopefully, there'll be a different strategy or a different concept that comes up. I think it's probably going to take some financial expertise to work on it. And if we can come up with a better way, I think we need to, be flexible enough to move towards it. But those are the challenges. And, what we have in front of us addresses part of it, but not all of it, but it's the best we can do at this point with the tools that we have to work with. So, again, I want to underscore the fact that this landscape is movable right now, and as a result of that, I agree with the Mayor Pro Tem. Go back to my original comment, we do need to monitor. And if there is something that significant that comes up, then it needs to come back to us for a potential amendment.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to make one more comment.
Yeah.
I keep hearing that when there's an increase in the property and it's sold, that only a small percentage goes to the individual homeowner, the rest goes to the city. And I'd like to make it clear that the money that goes to the city doesn't go to the general fund. That money goes back to affordable housing. So it's not like the city is making a profit on these homes or these properties. And maybe we can adjust that split somewhat. There's some sort of equitable way of doing that to make it more enticing. But that money does not go to some sort of special fund that gets Girl Scout cookies or something. It goes back to affordable housing.
Yeah. And if I can, we should probably add that the money only comes back to the city if an owner converts it to market rate. The agreements we have in place allow for a formula that allows a fairly sufficient level, not as much as you'd have if you're investing in market rate house, but a fairly good level of equity that you can build up in the house if you sell it to another qualifying family. But We think everything within the housing element, as far as inclusionary requirements, is very good. How we implement, though, is something we're going to, it's a little bit of trial and error. We're looking at the agreements as we go along and have some experience. Right now, we're coordinating a meeting, taking the lead on meeting with representatives from all the cities in the county. Our goal is to see if we can come up with a countywide standard for affordable housing agreements and go over some of these issues and come and work with lenders and come see if we can come up with something that will work for everybody.
Okay. Any other comments? If not, we'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor, I move we adopt a resolution of the City Council of the City of Arroyo Grande amending the housing element of the General Plan Amendment 04-003.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none. Roll call, please.
Mayor Pro Tem Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
And Mayor Farrar?
Yes. Thank you. Takes us to item 9C, continued public hearing, consideration of amended conditional use permit, case number 04001, allow a financial institution to occupy building J, 5 City Center.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'll introduce this project. This item was continued from the February 8th meeting to allow the applicant's traffic engineer and city's consulting engineer to provide additional traffic mitigation alternatives for intersections within the 5 City Center that are currently operating at an unacceptable level of service. Based on information presented to staff by Oros Engineering Group and OmniMeans, condition of approval number 6 has been amended as follows. Prior to issuing a certificate of occupancy, a designated right-turn lane at the eastbound Phase 1 driveway shall be designed, and a conceptual design for the proposed signalization at the Phase 1/Phase 2 driveway shall be submitted to the city for review and approval. The applicant shall bond for the right-turn lane improvements prior to occupancy, with construction to follow within 90 days of occupancy. The traffic analysis also includes proposed traffic mitigation for Pad I. I would like to emphasize that Council is not being asked to act on Pad I tonight or approve a traffic signal for development of Pad I. We are only considering approval of the Wells Fargo Bank with the previously stated traffic mitigation. It should be noted that other traffic mitigation alternatives could be studied for Pad I, and Council could propose an alternative mitigation instead of the conceptual design of a signal. An expanded traffic analysis with options for the entire 5 City Center could also be pursued. Given that the issues surrounding this project have concentrated on traffic-related impacts, I will hand over the discussion to Don Spagnolo and conclude by saying that the Planning Commission recommends that Council approve the amended CUP by resolution allowing a financial institution to occupy Building J. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, this evening I've invited Andrew Lee with OmniMeans and Steve Oros with the Oros Group that are going to make a presentation on the traffic issues that we discussed last time. So with that, I'll turn it over to Steve, who is going to... Carol's going to talk first. Okay.
Thank you. Good evening, Mayor, members of the Council. My name is Carol Florence. I'm a senior planner with Oasis Associates in San Luis Obispo, representing the applicant this evening. I first of all wanted to thank you for affording us the opportunity to productively utilize the last 4 weeks to analyze a variety of mitigation measures and prepare recommendations based on the scientific aspects of traffic engineering, and I think the more artful aspects as exemplified by human behavior. Based upon the results of the analysis, I would respectfully request that the Council approve the conditional use permit for the Wells Fargo use based upon the findings and conditions, and the applicant does concur with special condition number 6 as stated and maybe potentially amended by the end of the evening. Before I turn the presentation over to the traffic engineers, I want to communicate that we were all very acutely aware of Council's concerns and comments, and no doubt you will have additional questions this evening, so all I can ask for is your indulgence. I think our presentation may be a little lengthy, but hopefully comprehensive, and ask you for an open mind. We'd be more than happy to answer questions when the presentation's over, and I'm certainly here to address any of your concerns as well. With that said, I'd like to introduce Steve Oros with Oros Engineering Group, and Andrew Lee, who's going to be manning the computer, and I guess I'm going to be doing a little bit of Vanna White with the overhead, so will you excuse me?
Good evening. My name is Steve Oros, Oros Engineering Group. Traffic engineer for the project. And what I wanted to do was first acknowledge both staff's time in community development and public works and OmniMeans and working through this together as a collective group. I think you'll find that we've covered all the bases that we could see and have come up with a reasonable solution. One of the things that I'd like to go through tonight is how we look at level of service and delay, what triggers delay, because that's what's driving a lot of the improvements. And as you know, the city has a goal of level service C as an intersection standard, and when you have D, E, or F as a level of service at an intersection, you look at ways to improve that. At an unsignalized intersection, which is what we're looking at here on Rancho Parkway, the delays are caused by the amount of through traffic, in this case on Rancho Parkway, to the side street volumes that are actually stop controlled. So that as through traffic increases, so does the delay. And that's why as we took a look at the volumes, you may have more traffic on the weekends using the driveways, but less traffic on Rancho Parkway because of the commute traffic going home to work. So therefore, even though there's more traffic on the driveways, you have less intersection delay. And that's why we focused on the weekday PM peak hour as the study time to look at the levels of service, because that represented the worst delay. Now, as you saw in your packets, there was a list of 10 pieces that we have to as part of the puzzle. There we go. And what I'd like to do is briefly go through them to refresh everyone's memory of where we were and move on from there. And the first one is installing the roundabout at the lower driveway, and I'll just summarize. The lower driveway is down here where phase one approach and phase two approach. The Trader Joe's is up in here. West Branch is down here for reference. What this option did is that it improves the level of service, but two problems with a roundabout this location. One is the slope of Rancho Parkway and its proximity to a signalized intersections. Individually, roundabouts work. When you get them close to traffic signals, they operate differently, move traffic differently, so the combination isn't really a good traffic solution. The next option we looked at is to add a signal at this location. As a piece, and what initially it was assumed that with the distance between these two that it might not function. As we evaluated it further, as a signalized option, there is adequate distance between the two intersections with some striping changes out here to provide adequate spacing of the two intersections. Obviously, they would be interconnected, so they would talk to each other. To keep traffic flowing and not lock up the intersection. Number three is to install a right turn lane or additional lane coming out of the phase one access to free up movements at this intersection and improve the delay on that side of the street. Again, that would be a functional improvement that would work, and it does improve the level of service as well. The next piece that we had to work with was to close off this access into phase one. Access over here into the Trader Joe's area would remain. This roadway would be closed off entirely, forcing all the traffic that comes out of here now to use West Branch, sorry, Don, or Camino Mercado to get into the center. The next one, number five, was to remove the left turns coming out of phase two and out of phase one, which is where a lot of the delay was being created, and only allow left turns into the two sides of the shopping center. Again, what this does is it does improve the level of service, but it reduces the connectivity between the two parts of the center. The next option, or next, not option, but next part, was to, again, close off access through here, but allow left turns out of the phase one side of the intersection. Again, it's a larger portion, and that way you'd allow more people access out and force people to use the upper driveway here into the smaller area of phase two. We get to a combination. Ooh, that doesn't. With the lights, it's a little difficult to see. I'll explain this a little bit. Unless our gurus have. Ah, there we go. Thank you. This is one of the combination packages we came up with is that we have the additional lane over here on the right coming out of the Walmart and Albertson side. We have a one-way in to the phase two area over here. Left turns would be provided on both directions in Rancho Parkway, and that the traffic would be shielded up at the top here. Maybe you could zoom up a little bit. Thank you. Is that the left turn out of the upper driveway has a median here that would shield traffic so it could actually go into its own lane, and then the single lane coming down would still be there. This intersection could be signalized. It could be just stop controlled for this traffic. Again, that was an option we looked at to address some of the other site distance and speed issues on Rancho Parkway. Number eight. This is a very tight blow-up, but the intent of it is to show that on the back of the center along Camino Mercado, there would be some connection to go from the parking areas out to provide a relief valve for people in the back to get in and out of the center, and also to provide a little better access to the center from the rear. And then the last piece that we had to work with was just very simply signalization of the upper driveway, similar to what was being proposed as a signal down here. But again, it's another piece. Left turns would be protected in and out. It would provide for a little better sight distance for a traffic control device, and left turns in and out would be controlled with a signal, which would improve the safety up there. Now, there was three other pieces that came up during the process. You'll see where we're going in a few minutes with all the pieces, is that this is a detail of a roundabout concept up at Via Vaquero. It shows that there would be some grading required on the shopping center side, the phase one side, but in basic geometry, the intersection would work very well. Roundabouts do control speeds along a corridor, and it would be an appropriate traffic calming device for the intersection. There are other traffic calm devices that the city is very well aware of, similar to the ones that have been on Rodeo and some other places in the city, but this is just a traffic calming idea. Okay. This is very similar to number seven that we looked at, which is a combination of things. What our process was is that we started, this is getting into some of the solutions, is that we have a number seven that was created, and then OmniMeans took that concept and started applying some level of service criteria to it, and they needed to embellish it a little bit by adding the left turns into here and into this location at the phase one driveway while maintaining the one-way in, adding a separate right turn lane here with a second lane in the center, The right turn lane coming out of phase one is over here. But again, it started to get bigger and closer to what the existing conditions were to get the levels of service to start to reach the city's goals. And then last but not least is, should be familiar to at least one of the council members, Council Member Arnold, which is a very comprehensive plan where the rear access to the center is a part of that. We have a blow-up of what goes on down at this point, and then some changing of the access along West Branch as a bigger picture concept that includes a lot of parts, and then the blow-up of the area that we're concerned with right now, which in essence prohibits left turns into the is that the left turns into the phase two and left turns into phase one would be prohibited in some manner, yet allowing cross traffic. One of the dilemmas we face with that is as soon as you allow cross traffic, you have a large opening in the street here, which becomes a enforcement issue of people trying to make a left turn anyway. So we're going to be having to look at all these pieces. Now, what I've just gone through is kind of our toolbox of tools that we have available to us. And what Public Works, Community Development, Omni Means, and myself did is we sat down with all these pieces and said, okay, what are we going to do with all this? And we started to look at the goals and objectives that we had heard at the last meeting from the council of maintaining connectivity between the two sides of the center, retaining multiple turning movements, which means try to not to restrict turning movements, improve the level of service along Rancho Parkway, and improve safety in terms of the speed and line of sight and visibility of the all the vehicles. So we took the objectives that we had and the pieces we had and started to put things together. And what we started to evolve to is it started to focus in on number seven and the modification of number seven, which was the, you want to leave that one up for now? That one's fine. Where the pieces that started to come together was the right turn lane coming out of phase one, which provided an improvement and the level of service for this approach, the one-way in, and then the improvements down at this end with the channelization through Rancho Parkway started to make some sense for the Wells Fargo traffic. And you'll see in a few minutes some simulations of the actual delays that we're facing. One of the things that we wanted to make sure of is that knowing that Pad I and the development there is a very live project that's being studied and reviewed by the city, we needed to go one step further than Wells Fargo, say, if Pad I goes in, what would the traffic be? And we started looking at that, and the level of service you'll find here in a few minutes at this intersection here started to degrade to a point where we would have to take out all these improvements and install a traffic signal at that location. So we said, okay, time out. Let's take a look at this and what makes sense. Now, what we'd like to go through briefly is a visualization of this, in essence, another picture, like a moving picture this time, of the different traffic volume scenarios and levels of service. Could we dim the lights for a little bit? Because this is much better at when it's partially lit. Yeah, how's that? Or is that okay? Okay. What this first simulation shows is the cars moving through the intersections today. This is replicating the afternoon peak hour, and West Branch is down here. The traffic signal is functioning at this intersection. Here's the lower driveway. As we're calling it, phase one access is over here. Phase two is over here. This is stop-controlled coming out. Stop-controlled coming out of here, and stop-controlled coming out of the northern driveway. So as you can see, this is how the traffic is being simulated using the volumes that were observed.
Steve, can I interrupt you?
Sure.
Is that, when you say volumes being observed, is that peak hour?
Yes, PM peak hour counts that OmniMeans collected for the driveways.
I don't see the stacking that I typically see in peak hour, but that's all right. The stacking coming out of the phase one is correct.
Okay. You'll see that what this, and this is a good point to talk about this, and thank you for the question, is that this is modeling the full hours delays. You know, there might be a 5-minute increment of time or 10-minute that you have a few longer queues, but then that goes away and you're looking at the rest of the hour where there's no delays. So what this model is doing is that it's taking those peak hour factors, which is, you'll see the few, once in a while there's two or three cars backed up here and a couple of cars over here and some down at the intersection. It's giving you a visual simulation of the hour's delay. And what we're seeing is that in the levels of service that you normally see in traffic studies, this is a visual picture of that. And in the OmniMean study, the level of service, there's three cars stacked up now over here, but the delay on this approach into this intersection is at level service E, as in elephant, and on this approach it's level service F, as in Frank.
What counts were you using here?
These were the counts that OmniMeans collected when was it, in fall last year, summer?
Is this, no, I meant time of day. Is this weekend?
No, weekday PM peak. And I explained earlier why we took a look and focusing on in on the weekday PM peak between 4 and 6 PM. Something that we want to keep in mind is that this approach here is level service E, and this is level service F. Now, what that means is not that there's more cars stacked up. It means that cars have to wait longer to get through the intersection. And that's something that is a little different, is that you can see congestion, but delay is a little harder to describe. It's each car, on the average, needs to wait so many seconds, and the thresholds are at 25 seconds. You turn to level service D, as in David. 35 goes to E, and then 55 goes to F, I believe.
Steve?
Yes.
Excuse me. I'm looking at this segment right here. There appears to be minimal traffic coming in this direction, and the last car that was there just sort of disappeared. I didn't see it turn anywhere or go anywhere. It just flashed off the screen.
Yeah. And also, we were looking at this is two times actual speed, and sometimes in that fast forward a little bit, a car will be gone in that next frame. So again, the main point we want to show here is that this is what the levels of service methodology show as level service E, and this is level service F. Just it's the time of each vehicle has to wait. So
and
it's,
this is current.
This is current. This is today.
Okay.
And again, what we're going to be showing you is a difference from today in a similar format versus we can't show you what the traffic is out there with the project if we can go out and look at it. This is the best simulation we have. And when we go to the next one, we add the Wells Fargo traffic and no change to the geometrics. This is what you see, and we'll let it run here for a few minutes. But essentially, the only thing that's changing is that there's more traffic in the Wells Fargo, the 4,000 square feet here. And what, because of the small number of trips, this is still at level service C. It's incrementally a little bit higher. And this is still at level service F. But as you can see, the remaining intersection here and up here are still operating at level service B, as in boy.
Another quick question, Steve. And I mentioned this to staff at the close of the last meeting. It was sort of an afterthought. But when the traffic counts were taken by OmniMeans, I looked at the dates that the counts were taken. And when they were taken, Vignettos, the restaurant, was closed. That's 5,000, 6,000 square feet of restaurant and trip generation.
Very good point. Mr. Mayor, one of the things I neglected to add is that when the models were done, they added in the traffic for the restaurant into the base conditions. So they added that traffic into it supplementally.
How many trips was that? Okay, and so what does that do to the overall, the projected trip number based on the reality? We were looking at, an additional 4,000 trips a day. What does the restaurant do to it?
4,000 trip number was?
We were talking about what was forecast for Five City Center overall, Global Look.
Oh.
What was forecast and what you see today based on the counts? Close to 4,000 additional daily trips.
Okay. Mr. Mayor, the 4,000 difference was between what it was forecast to be based on the formulas compared to what was the driveway counts. Was that the 4,000 increase?
That's correct. And what I want to do is factor in the restaurant traffic into that figure.
Okay. The restaurant traffic would have been included in the square footage for the overall center. So,
but we didn't get a count on the actual trip generation.
For the restaurant, no. That's correct. Okay, but the restaurant traffic was taken into account into these conditions as well, because that was a large vacant space, but we wanted to replicate that.
If I might add something, when we conducted the trip generation study, we accounted for the Vignetto's square footage in the trip generation projection because it was an existing part of the Five Cities Shopping Center. The portion of the traffic not accounted for previously by the restaurant was the observed traffic counts. This condition has been revised to include the restaurant traffic.
Yeah, my whole point for raising this was that all the other counts were based on actual driveway counts, physical driveway counts, not projections, because you guys went back and counted, you know, all of the driveways for real. So we did not get an actual driveway count with the restaurant. You're using a formula, essentially.
That's correct.
Right?
Yes.
Okay.
As follow, just so the numbers that were in the table a month ago, did you add to those the restaurant trips so that the numbers that we looked at in our table were count plus the projection for the restaurant?
The ones submitted a month ago did not include the restaurant.
At all?
At all.
Okay.
They have been revised to include.
Okay. That's one. And then I have a question. What did adding a restaurant do to the level of service here? Did it change it significantly?
It added several seconds of delay. It added several seconds of delay, but did not push it into the next threshold for a different letter grade for the level of service.
Thank you.
One question I've got about the simulation we're looking at right now. When you first brought this up, it did show four vehicles in driveway south. That's not been repeated.
Okay. What we're looking at here is that if you, there's like a 10-minute, is it 10 minutes time period within the peak hour that we're looking at. And it's a simulation of, you can pick every 10 minutes throughout the hour, and you'll see once every 10 minutes.
Back and forth. It's just starting over, and now you got four. And that's the only time we see four in there.
So six times an hour, we would see four cars.
Exactly. I don't know if the rest of the council members heard that, but in essence, six more times in the hour, you would see, or five more times, total of six in the hour, you would see, you would expect to see a stack of four cars. And that's probably when you happen to be going through the intersection. Again, this is a simulation. Again, there's four or five cars over here on the out of phase one as well. So this is the condition with the restaurant traffic and the base condition and the Wells Fargo traffic with no improvements. And what we find is that the level of service here remains at E, incrementally a little bit worse, and the level of service over here is level service F, a little bit worse than it was in the base condition. Obviously, there's more traffic on the side street. There's more vehicles that are delayed. So we took a look at what makes the most sense to improve, and what, you know, we took baby steps as we went through this. And the next simulation you're going to see is that you'll see that over here now we have a second lane coming out of phase one, which was one of the pieces of the puzzle we had. We saw, okay, how can we improve the level of service? And what we found here is that the best geometry for these two lanes would be one left turn lane, and then the other lane would be a through and a right turn lane at the same time. It's a combination through and right. We realized that in the staff report it talked about it adding an exclusive right turn lane. What has happened since the time the staff report had been prepared is that we took a look at the level of service, and this geometry provided the best level of service. Still, the concept is still there, adding a second lane to that approach, which reduces the delay per vehicle.
Steve, may I let me just clarify.
Yes.
So you're saying that the additional lane is going to provide for both the right-hand and the through traffic?
That's correct.
And that provides a better level of service?
Yes, it does. And the reason being is that you have the left turn delay in a separate lane than the through delay.
Gotcha.
Those are the two movements that conflict with the through traffic mostly on Rancho Parkway. Again, we get back to the original premise. What causes delay? Traffic on this street. What potential conflicts is the left turn coming out? They have to look for southbound and northbound on Rancho Parkway. Same thing with the through movement. They have to watch both movements on Rancho Parkway. The right turn only has to pay attention to one direction. They should watch all movements, but that's the key one. Okay. Now, this scenario provides level service C, as in Charlie, which is the desired goal. This side is still F. Better, but it's still F. So we go, okay, now what? What can we do? What makes sense as the next step? And the next step magically will appear in a second, is implementing the concept of the one-way circulation pattern. Again, this was the approach going out that caused the most delay. This over here was at level of service C. So we said, okay, how can we fix that? We said, okay, let's take the tool that had the one-way in, and then this one has one-way or two-way traffic up here. We try to maintain as much as we could of the existing condition, but mitigating the level of service. What we found here now is that because of the added traffic now that everyone's coming out here, they still want a desire to go this way. What has happened is that the through traffic now is increased, which kicks this delay up, increases it. So now we bump again back to level service D on this approach over here. So we fixed one, it squirted out somewhere else. Now what? Now, in the bigger scope of things, we started with level service E and F. We've got it down to a D over here now. This intersection is still level service B, which is okay, and this one's still level service B, which is okay. We have mitigated the level of service to a better than existing condition. And when we mitigate traffic, we try to mitigate the project's component or the additional impact caused by the project. Since we've improved the level of service to better than it was existing, we felt, okay, we've met the desired goal and we can stop now. Now, this is where we took a step back and said, okay, we know there's pad I out there. What happens now? So the next discussion will be include the preliminary numbers for pad I and trip generation. We're still in progress on developing those and working through that, but we have a reasonable idea. And we went back to, okay, where are we with the right turn lane or the second lane coming out of the phase one? What levels of service are we looking at? When we look at this time, this level of service is now D at this point with the pad I traffic. This is still F. So, okay, it was pretty obvious, but we wanted to model it anyway to go on to the next step. Now, let's take a look at the one way, which mitigated the improvement last time to something better. And again, the simulation, you can watch here for a few minutes. Obviously, the delay over here on this approach is gone because it's one way in. This intersection is operating a level service B, which is great. But what happens over here on these two-lane approach is that the level of service is back up to E, which is the existing configuration. We're back to square one. which doesn't work. So we said, okay, now what? Go back to our toolbox, and we look at the last simulation we have right now, and Andrew is hurriedly going to it. Because we still haven't reached the level service C goal yet. Now, what we've looked at here is, okay, we said, okay, so the next best thing is to signalize the intersection here, which improves the level of service. And with this, the level of service at this intersection now is at level of service B as in boy. This intersection is at level of service B as in boy. They all, along the corridor, get to that point. The second lane is still over here on the phase one approach. And we found, okay, here's our ultimate solution. A couple of questions have come up about this signal. As we have a little deja vu. We heard about it, then it went away, and now it's back again. Well, one thing that's different at this point is we've taken, OmniMeans has taken the next step of evaluating critically the queue and the backup from this approach here, backing up towards West Branch, and also the queue backing up from West Branch going up this way for southbound traffic. And what they found is that with some restriping out here, the two intersections could function without blocking each other. Obviously, they'll need to be interconnected, so the inner two controllers would talk to each other, and no queues would back up into the other intersections. But that appears to be the ultimate solution in this corridor right here when PADEye comes online. So what we took back is, okay, with Wells Fargo, what makes sense to put in the ground today? And that's what evolved into what was in the staff report as the condition number 6, which was design and build this the second lane here, because we know that's good. That's a common element to all of the ultimate solution. And since we're not ready for the signal here at this point, let's have Wells Fargo design for that intersection as a signalized intersection. And then when PADEye discussions come on, then we can start talking about other improvements and discuss it at that point of the timing of things. Also understanding that there has been significant concern about how the whole center functions, access, what works, what access points are less used and what are overly used, and how we can improve that, which gets into the rear access element and a few other things. But right now, we're focusing on Wells Fargo and what makes sense for that, and then we can always move on to the bigger picture of the center with PADEye. And that would be the recommendation, is to, with staff's the report, focus on the right, the second lane, design the signal, and provide the backup to the city that shows all the details of how what's incorporated into that signal to make it function, and then that would mitigate Wells Fargo's impacts, and that things beyond that, the timing of when the signal is installed or other circulation improvements around the center would be addressed when PADEye comes before you. With that, we went through a lot of information, and I'm available, as was Andrew Lee from OmniMeans, for any clarifications or expansion. Thank you.
I have several questions. Well, first of all, I'll ask if any other council members have questions. Councilmember Dickens, why don't you go first?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Let me start with the exit out of, or the exit or entrance, whatever you want to call it, off of Rancho Parkway into Phase 1. I noticed on Attachment 3, as it's presented here, that it looks like there's actually a smaller lane that's been provided in this particular area. Wait, that's not, I'm sorry, this area here. So I'm looking at specifically Attachment 3 that was presented in the staff report, and that would be what you are now recommending as being the lane that is added here, oops, the lane that's added that's then going to be for both right-hand turns out of phase one and then through traffic into phase two. And so is the depiction on alternative three what's being proposed, or are we talking about more of an extended additional lane there?
Okay. Good question and a keen eye. When this was presented at the last meeting, it was a very quick drawing of a concept. And what has happened in the past 30 days is that we've looked at that and looked at what the expected queue of the left turn lane is and have designed this length to be longer than that left turn queue so that the through traffic in the right can still get around the backup of left cars, left turning movements. So, yes, the lane that's actually being constructed would be longer.
Okay. And it looks like if that lane were to be constructed, it no longer then, if it's going to be the one that's going to be for right-hand turns and for through traffic, it no longer aligns to phase two correctly.
Okay.
It's now off center.
What Council Member Dickens, what the ultimate configuration would be is that there would be some widening over here on this side. The goal would be to align those through movements across, and there's room to adjust it left and right, but the basic concept is adding a second lane, exiting the center at that point. We Public Works and the design, we can work through that.
Okay.
But, yeah, that would be a goal to make them align.
Okay. And then my last question, but anyways, was there any thought or is there even the possibility of putting – four lanes here. In other words, you'd have the entrance, which would be pretty much as existing. Of course, it'd have to be moved further up. You'd have the left hand through, and then a right hand. Is that even feasible in that particular area? And if it were feasible, would that even was it looked at to see whether that would increase the level or the level of service? Thank you.
Increased levels or reduced
delay. Decrease, yeah.
If we were looking at the shopping center on paper, that would be a reasonable thing to look at. But right now we have two existing buildings that are constructed, and there just isn't enough real estate between the two buildings to get the fourth lane within the lanes that we need for the queues that we're seeing today. So the three lanes that we have in concept is about all we can fit between the two buildings.
It would appear to me that the real estate would only be needed right up in here. It wouldn't be constricted by the buildings themselves. The real estate we'd be talking about would just be right up front here, because we're not talking about large numbers. I'm assuming, in at least the current counts, the through traffic is not large numbers at this point. The large numbers are actually turning right.
Yep.
And then the delays are happening, as you mentioned earlier, because of the left-hand turns. And just to have that ability to better improve that, we would just add another lane just in that particular area. But I'm just curious.
Two things we can do. Right now, I think the queue of vehicles, the straight or left, is about five or six cars, which is about 120 or 100 to 125 feet long, which means that from the street here, coming back about 100 or so feet, is where the maximum queue would be for a left or a through, which means that we'd have to bring the lane back into here to provide enough room for our vehicles to get around the maximum queues in each of the lanes. So it's something that, if this is something, this concept of adding lanes over here is what is desired, that could be evaluated in more design detail of how much room do we have and what will fit through there. Based on our preliminary evaluations, unless Don has a different opinion, I don't think we can get more than the three lanes that we're looking at between those two buildings on that approach.
Yeah, as I say, we haven't measured any of these things. There's a walkway that comes through there. There's ADA requirements. There's all kinds of things that need further study on that. So we certainly will be happy to look at that, though.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Yeah.
Who wants to go next?
I'm sorry. One more question. I'm sorry. The only other question I had was that we were provided also with alternative 9, which actually showed a back access to Camino Mercado, and you just you glossed over that, but it wasn't really part of the overall picture. Is that something that's being proposed at this particular time as an alternative? And if it were put in place, what would it do to the actual level of service in the area that we're studying?
That was deemed to be part of the larger changes of access for the center. It would provide some relief at this point, but from what we could gather, the amount would be very negligible at this location. You may see some improvements down along the West Branch intersections as people go out the back versus come out onto West Branch and travel either to Rancho Parkway or to Camino Mercado and travel up into the city. So right now, it's not a part of the Wells Fargo mix. It could be a part of the Pad I mix.
Okay. Thank you.
None of these have been thrown out. It's just when do they get implemented?
Can I follow up on that? In terms of it being a part of the Pad I mix or the Wells Fargo mix, the improvements you're looking at for Wells Fargo were looked at initially. But then when we decided to take a look, or you decided, and I think it's a good idea, to take a look at what are the gross effects of Pad I and how would that affect what you want to do for Wells Fargo, that makes a lot of sense. It seems like the alternative 9 with the exit entrance to the rear might have a significant or a noticeable impact on the intersections we're studying now. So it might well be worth taking the time to add that into the mix and see what's going on. So I did appreciate seeing the depiction of how all these things interrelated. And I think that will have an impact on the people that are going to exit that driveway and turn left. They're not going to come out and turn left now. They're going to go out that back. So there would be an impact. So I think that does influence the traffic study here.
Do you have some questions?
Yeah, just a couple. One of the suggestions last time was one way in and one way out, and I'm kind of inferring that was not studied because the two having the one way out because it created more through traffic would have an adverse effect on the southern entrance, and so therefore that wasn't studied.
Yeah, we did study it in number 7 is the alternative that had number the one way in and one way out concept, and from a geometric standpoint, things looked well and it worked. And then when OmniMeans started to apply the level of service criteria to that, we started to see that it wasn't improving things as much, even though it looked good geometrically. And it started, and that was one of the concepts that we showed towards the end there. I think it was like number 12 or so. But it was starting to get too close to what's existing, so we weren't achieving anything. And that's what kind of led us down the road to looking at bigger picture of improvements of what makes sense in the overall scheme of things.
Okay. And the other question I had, because I kind of lost track with all the scenarios there, what you're actually proposing going forward with Wells Fargo would be that both entrances would still be two ways.
Correct.
And what would I picked up that the level of service on the phase one side would at that point be a D. What would the level of service on phase two be with Wells Fargo? I never heard that.
The level of service on this approach over here, with the Wells Fargo traffic, with the restaurant in accommodated, would be a level of service C, as in Charlie.
Okay.
So on this side. Okay. On the phase two side, it would still remain at F.
Okay. All right. I always have trouble. I keep looking at it the other way. Okay.
Some of these are.
All right.
Apologize for that.
C and F, not D and okay.
Correct.
All right. And
it does reach D with Pad I, but that's a different volume scenario. That might have been where you heard.
And I have one last question. Based on the very last simulation we saw, the signalized, you indicated an island sitting out on Branch that actually would close off the entrance. Yeah. You notice there's an island that comes down and actually would restrict left turn. left turn in and left turn out by the movie theater there. Does that affect the way over there? Yeah, that's exactly where I'm at. Does that affect any of these patterns? Was that something that?
Again, this was in concept. This would remain the two-way left turn lane that's out there. It would not be a raised median at that point.
Oh, okay.
It was not the intent to go and change that.
Okay. Okay. Now, those are my questions. Thank you.
Yes.
Don, can you put up my overview one? That's the... The one that's the more overview, not the zoomed in one. Mm-hmm. I don't see why I can't pick up that real estate. These are going to kind of be a combination of both questions and a little bit of a statement. It's going to kind of mix. The concern that I have with what's been studied so far is that we have a lot of entrances and exits in this center, especially in phase one, and there doesn't seem to be any kind of attempt to change behavioral habits that people are doing right now. And the one thing that I walked away with, I mean, I feel like I'm becoming a traffic engineer without the degree in this center, is I had proposed something the last time, and I definitely heard from Council Member Dickens and I believe from the mayor that they were opposed to eliminating cross-traffic between Phase 1 and Phase 2. So, and I also heard the mayor talk about the movie theater issue as far as the amount of traffic that's coming in there. And so when I put together the overall plan that I've got here, I looked at where are we generating the majority of the traffic right here. And what I'm seeing, and your little cars moving around are showing the same thing, that we're getting a lot of traffic coming from both directions on Branch, where people are coming up here and they're turning down here. And logic says, and I mean, I catch myself doing it for no particular reason either. It is definitely easy to come down here right into Albertsons, but the reality is if you're on Branch, to continue down here and to turn in here is really not a hardship by any stretch of the imagination. We have what's basically the main collector for Phase 1 right here that I would say that's probably the least used of all the roads. One, I think, and that was why I mentioned the change of turn arrow here, I think definitely when you're coming up West Branch, no one wants to wait for that turn signal when you've got the entrance down here and the movie theater. So I definitely believe that if we're going to leave a turn signal there, that it should be that it's after it turns green, then you can still turn left on green. But my thing is that if we were to stop this, and I understand people can do things that they're not allowed to do, but at the same token, we could restrict it to where it would be a more difficult turn. And if it became illegal, I think most people would probably choose to not do it. But if we stopped allowing people to make this one left-hand turn here, which is the majority of the problem, despite what the drawing shows, the reality is this is still a relatively short distance. And this is what makes the crossing difficult and the left-hand turn difficult. That if we were to stop that and send these cars down, and then this is where the mayor had a concern with the amount of traffic, I was proposing that if we did a right-hand in and right-hand out, that would definitely cut down some of the traffic where people are coming out here making a left. Now let them go to a controlled signal or let them come up here where it's a safer turn. But the logic to come down here, make a left, and make another left, which people do, it's nuts, or to come here and make a left again where you're at a very busy. I think instead of trying to say, how are we going to deal with this intersection that we already know is very impacted, why don't we look at saying, how do we get the people that are using the mall, the center, to use more of the entrances? And I haven't heard any discussion about that. And I truly, and one of the frustrations that I have right now is, with the exception of the crossover, this is pretty much what I proposed 4 weeks ago. And until I talked to Carol yesterday and to Steve yesterday, no one had contacted me to ask me, and I'm going to guess this scenario was not modeled. So we truly don't know what the impact would be if some of these scenarios were done. My problem with it, with the ultimate goal where we're headed right now is a traffic signal here. One, I have a real problem when we're told a traffic signal can't work there, we have issues, and then all of a sudden we're told now it can work. That automatically makes me become really suspicious that we're just creating a model that will fit the needs and reality will be totally different than what the model tells us. So that becomes the first thing. My second concern is that with the exception of peak hours here, we do not need a traffic signal there. We probably will not need a traffic signal there later. And so all of a sudden, unless it's going to be a very smart signal that's going to sense when someone's coming up here to make that turn, that we may be driving all traffic away from this this intersection. So I guess what I'm looking at right now is I don't think we've done a real thorough study of all the options. We've done, seems to be an obsession with we're not going to change any behavioral habits, whether or not they make sense or not. I mean, the fact that there was actually at the last meeting a proposal to do away with the left turn here and send traffic down and make a U-turn here, I mean, that was probably the worst idea we've seen yet, and that was actually what was proposed. So I'm very skeptical right now. I'm going to be real honest. So I don't think that to say that a right-hand turn is a solution for Wells Fargo right now and we'll worry about all the other problems later. I'm back to where I was last meeting, which is we need to solve what exists today with the consideration that we don't want to be tearing things out. So I guess I'm yeah. Sorry, Mr. Mayor, that I'm really more or less making comments right now. Is there a reason why more of these alternatives have not been studied with the computer-generated model? I mean, obviously, it's a neat little model. You can plug in whatever, you know, scenarios you want to do. I look at, you know, I didn't see in the computer model one close call here. And in real life, there's a lot of close calls there. So if all our cars were computerized, I guess we wouldn't have that problem. I'd be a little sarcastic, but, you know, it concerns me that we're kind of pigeonholed on one thing. And then I do want to comment. I guess now I am really going to go to comment, so I'll hold that off. So thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Would you like me to address some of those, Mr. Mayor?
Yeah, sure. Why don't you do that?
Okay. One of the things we were struggling with is how big is our sphere of influence right now? We're looking at what's before you tonight is Wells Fargo, which is a 4,000-square-foot infill use. We're here because it's not on the list of previous uses for the center. We're also, by association, because it's come up already, there's a Pad I development which is looming out there that's being evaluated. So the two projects are starting to get commingled a little bit, and where do we draw the line and how do we separate the two? It's difficult. Sometimes we can't, and that's why we've Pad I has come up several times this evening. What we were trying to do initially with the work up to date is take a kind of a gross look at what's likely to be a reasonable fix for Pad I. What we have not evaluated is what would it take to change driver behavior at some of these other access points around the center, because it was felt that that was beyond Wells Fargo. Very appropriate for Pad I, but beyond Wells Fargo. And that's where we were trying to draw a line of, okay, what are we trying to work with here? And, you know, these are all great ideas, and I couldn't agree with you more about looking at the larger center. But at what point in time do we do that? And that's why we were looking at the right turn over, or the second lane over here on the exit to phase one, as something that was kind of consistent in all the scenarios we were looking at as trying to fix something. That would be commensurate with the development with Wells Fargo. Now, we've talked about this quite a bit, about the need to evaluate access for the entire center, and we've had pieces of access in here. We've looked at... Oh, I lost my pointer. We've looked at, you know, what can we do here? We've looked at various solutions here. We've looked at various solutions at the upper driveway, Via Vaquero. But again, where do we draw the line between Wells Fargo and Pad I? And the collective thinking with ourselves and staff was, let's look at the right the second lane over here on this approach and move on to Pad I and looking at the whole center. So that's kind of the line we were trying to differentiate between the two projects.
Do you have any response, or can I go?
I got comments, but you're going to open it, I assume, so.
If I might add
something. Well, I have a mix of just comments, observations, and questions, so I'm sure there'll be enough left over for when the real comment period starts. But I want to address the last point that you made, Steve. If I understood council correctly when we first heard this item, we weren't drawing any lines. The line that we were drawing was to look at comprehensively what Wells Fargo and Pad I would do. That has always been my concern, at least, and I think I understood the same thing coming from my colleagues. So we've sort of come full circle. We're not here to try and justify Wells Fargo. We're here to try and solve a comprehensive circulation problem, of which the remainder of Building J contributes to. I think it's Building J.
Yeah, Wells Fargo.
So, I would have to take issue with this continual effort to sort of divide and call out singly Wells Fargo. That was never my intent here. My intent was to revisit circulation as it relates comprehensively to the remainder of Phase 2 to include Wells Fargo. So I just wanted to make that observation. The other observation that I wanted to come back to, Kelly, was a statement that, I heard it from you, I heard it from Rob, but I want to make sure for the record that I understand staff's recommendation. The Planning Commission recommends the council adopt the attached resolution. Rob clarified that the last meeting. First and foremost, we don't have that same Planning Commission seated right now. Second thing is that they did not have in front of them the traffic study, the comprehensive traffic study, to include the additional trip generation information when they made the decision. And Rob was kind enough to clarify that for us at the last meeting. I wanted to clarify it again. I watched the traffic model, particularly the model that ran with the signals. And I don't know if you recall, Steve, you were somewhat involved in the original study for this center. Yes. And and I can recall that the community at the time was concerned about the same intersection that we are now revisiting. And we were... if you recall, the original design of the shopping center was that the entrance would actually be down here, closer to the corner. That was the original proposed design. We brought in the whole notion, I think you remember that, Don. We brought in the whole notion of the queuing effect, and they moved it to the location where it presently is. We also talked about circulation, again, with a view towards recognizing that Phase 2 would build out and that there would be a significant intensity of use over here in a number of different configurations. At the time, we didn't envision a Trader Joe's, but that's what we have. So the whole issue came up about traffic control here. Back then, when this was first planned, and we looked at stop sign scenarios, and we looked at signals. And I'm looking at the model here, and I think OmniMeans is partially correct, only with all due respect, I watched this model, and I was out there this afternoon, peak period, right, not too long before I came here to this meeting. And what I observe there is not reflected in this model. I'm sorry, but it just isn't reflected. What I've seen there on the weekends isn't reflected in this model. But what we were informed of here was that because of the proximity, even with an attempt at queuing, or even at with the attempt at synchronization, it was too close. The segment was too close. I watched the model, and I watched minimal queuing in this left turn lane. From this curb line to the entrance to that left turn lane is 32 steps of my steps. And I stood out there and watched this left turn lane fill up, and I envisioned a signal being there, and I envisioned that signal turning red for 20 seconds with the traffic flow that I was physically observing this afternoon, just as an example. In a 20-second delay, 20 to 30-second delay, you would have queuing back to Branch Street. There would be no way. There are two critical movements here. There's this right turn movement, which goes into one lane, and then there's this left turn movement that contributes to it as well. The other thing that I saw, and it was depicted somewhat when you ran this model, is the swerving movement from the right turn traffic here to get into that left turn lane. I watched your model run. There was about one out of every four cars that turned green and went into that left turn lane. That's not the behavior I saw today. I saw the majority of the right turn traffic here headed into that left turn pocket, and that left turn pocket filling up. So, it makes me take step back and ask the fundamental question: if when this was first approached as a mitigation measure, and I believe it was AGRA who had their traffic engineers review the behavior of this in sync with this and make a determination at the time that it was not appropriate, because regardless of the degree of synchronization, queuing would still occur. Now we're here, and we're hearing that it's okay, that it can be done. So I'm a little bit, the whole thing gives me pause. And in terms of synchronization, I won't ask how you would do it, because I recognize that that's probably another study. But when we talk about synchronizing signals here, we can learn a lesson a little bit farther. You can't see it. It's off the screen. But when you get down to Briscoe, Halcyon, El Camino, back when we were told that that was a mitigation measure to handle circulation for the entire center, the synchronization of all of those signals together would ensure that there was not undue delay at Briscoe Halcyon and El Camino. More importantly, it would ensure that there would not be any queuing back up on Highway 101. So with all of that synchronization, as a colleague back then once mentioned, the question was, what happens when the light turns red? And it happened to me the other day, getting off on Halcyon. I found out that I couldn't get off on Halcyon. I found out that the back end of my car was still in the number 2 lane on southbound 101 with synchronized signals. Scary position to be in. So I guess I'm, the larger issue and question remains for me from a technical standpoint, how the whole synchronization of these two signals would work. It's still a big question mark. I have a general question, Kelly, about our general plan. It seems to me that when we did the general plan update, there was a statement in there, and I'm not sure if it's in land use or circulation or whatever, could be in both. But I remember a caveat that we would not chase increased intensity of use or new development without ensuring proper infrastructure in place. another lesson learned from experience. So if we put that general plan provision to work here, it would seem to me, with all of the conditions in here, that we're doing the same thing. We're chasing what would be increased intensity of use. We're essentially chasing additional development in an already approved shopping center, I understand that, with potential infrastructure solutions. That's how this whole thing seems to me. Cart before the horse, again, even though we have lessons learned. I have a question for OmniMeans, and it gets back to Councilmember Arnold's question about the behavior of the shopping center itself. Have you folks done any studies looking at, I guess, the way in which the shopping center formed in terms of its services and retail establishments?
No, sir.
Is there a way in which you can work on the behavioral circulation issues?
We can conduct that analysis, but we have not done so.
Has OmniMeans done that in the past, looked at rechanneling or some form of behavioral modification for drivers?
The overall circulation of the entire shopping center was not part of the project scope, and therefore it was not conducted.
Okay, but my question is, have you ever done it before in other areas?
No.
Okay. How about you, Steve?
Yes. South Coast Plaza.
Okay. How did that go?
The basic process is you need to look at the types of retail uses you have, the success, because there's a classification for a restaurant. You could have Bob's Restaurant or you could have McDonald's. McDonald's is a higher, attracts more traffic. That's one of the things you look at in a center like this, is when you go back and look at, okay, what actually went in and where and how the whole center fits. You start looking at, okay, there's a big draw over here at this place, there's less draw over here. It wasn't really anticipated that would be such a magnet. And what you do, you start looking at the big picture, where parking spaces are, where are people coming from, and where do they go to when you're done. And that's something that I personally have done in other shopping centers and office complexes, when you start looking at here's what the original concept, it's built, this has become very successful over here, and it was just an average use before, but how do you fix that? So we have looked at that. It does get into a lot of the art form that Carol talked about of driver behavior, which is more art than science. But it's something that can be done, and you can evaluate it, and sometimes there are things that you can do to change things. But it tends to be very expensive to change, and that's when you start looking at, okay, how much are we improving by investing this over here? And it's a complex puzzle, but it's something that I've done in the past.
If I may add a retraction, I apologize. I thought that the question was regarding Five Cities Center itself. OmniMeans has conducted analyses of internal circulation for other shopping centers. I misunderstood and thought that it was regarding Five Cities.
Yeah, that's why I asked you if you'd ever done it anywhere before. So
yes, we have.
Okay, so it's something that's not uncommon.
No, it is not.
Questions?
Mr. Mayor, I just had one other question. Kelly, when I read the staff report, I just, in the additional condition that was being recommended at this particular time, and it's the bottom of the first page of the staff report, the second sentence talks about the applicant shall bond for the right turn lane improvements prior to occupancy. Who is the applicant?
The applicant would be Wells Fargo.
Wells Fargo is going to bond for that type of improvement. It's not the Five Cities. That's not the management company for Investec.
Okay, it would be Investec then, is what you're saying? Okay.
Well, Investec is managing it. The owner of the shopping center is still Agra, is it not? Agra LLC?
Carol Florence, again, I think the question really is that I'm representing the applicant, whether it be the actual owner or Investec this evening, and they would be responsible for the design, bonding, and the construction of that right turn, and not Wells Fargo.
It would be
performed on behalf of.
That would be my understanding as well. Okay. Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Okay. Did you have more?
Yes, just the last couple of statements. I was hoping to bring a little more focus and maybe a different perspective on what I've been hearing. Granted, I do not have the history that most of you do with this center, and I'm not sure that I can help with that at this point. But I would like to say on behalf of the applicant that they have shown and are intending to continue to want to show good faith in attempting to resolve these existing problems. I think that we weren't trying to separate and Wells Fargo from the more comprehensive picture other than to say that whatever we proposed for Wells Fargo had to fit with whatever the big scheme of the rest of the center was. And I think that what I'm understanding from the traffic engineers, they're the experts, they're saying with the right turn, the level of service with the addition of Wells Fargo would be adequate today and would also service the potential improvements that the applicant is willing to look at from a more comprehensive standpoint. So I'm wondering if I might offer some change of language to the special condition, because I don't want anyone to think, especially given the comments before and this evening, that the signal is the only solution. I think it's a solution that came about because the traffic engineers have tried to balance looking at a variety of alternatives and making sure that not only in the short term but the long term that this was going to be satisfactory. So I don't want you to think that I'm standing here asking you tonight to condone, approve, or otherwise determine that the traffic signal at the Phase 1, Phase 2 intersection is going to happen. I think what I'd like to do is change the language, and maybe staff can help me with this, that maybe what we should be looking at in a little more depth is the signal, but stepping back and looking at some of the other aspects to see if we are able, in fact, to change some of the behavior of this center. I know that this is difficult for you. It's difficult for my applicants. They're trying to fill in an existing center that was approved, right, wrong, or indifferent, bring to the community uses, bring to the community hopefully some revenue, but they are also willing to try to work with the community to resolve some of these more difficult traffic issues. Is it a perfect world? Are we going to be able to achieve everything from a traffic standpoint that we all individually have a vision of perfection? I don't think so, but I would like to think with the expertise in the audience, your staff, and certainly the contribution of the council, that we can get awfully close. But it won't be perfect. So this evening I'm going to ask again for your approval of Wells Fargo and the conditional use permit with a special condition that will address not only the design implementation of the right turn out of Phase 1, but also instead of solely looking at the signal, to pull back and to look more comprehensively to see if there are some behaviors that we may be able to modify that would mitigate. So if that's acceptable to you and staff can craft some language, I know that the applicant would appreciate that and would concur with that offer.
Thank you. Anyone else who would like to address this issue?
Steve Ross, 211 Garden Street. On the depiction up here, there's been a lot of talk about queuing left-hand traffic turning into the Walmart side on the south driveway. If that driveway within the center was made a one-way out only, that would eliminate left-hand turns off of Rancho Grande into that center coming from the west going east. I guess that's what it is. It would still allow cross traffic. You would not have put in another lane because you could have a dedicated right-hand turn and dedicated left-hand turn straight through.
Question,
sure.
Steve, if it's one way out only, it doesn't allow cross traffic to come back from the Trader Joe's?
No, it doesn't. It just allows one way traffic out from the big center into the smaller center. That's correct. It would still be two-way traffic out of the smaller center. That would stop people from making a right off of West Branch, going half a block up and taking a left into the center. It would force them either to go down, and although it's not a good option, in through the movie entrance, which people would do probably if they're going to go to Jamba Juice or Starbucks, or force them down to the entrance which was designed for the shopping center, to have them entering there rather than making the little zip-zop shortcut. I didn't hear anybody talk about that. That driveway is, once you leave the stop sign at the intersection down by Hollywood Video, has no other access off of it, so it wouldn't be real hard to change it to a one-way. That was my only suggestion.
Thank you. Anyone else?
John Keene, 298 North Elm. I just worked and installed traffic signals for the last 20 years. Happened to be involved in the traffic signals that we're talking about. They're already in place. The synchronization that you're talking about, Mr. Mayor, is not in place between House Hand and Briscoe. There is none. Never was. The only synchronization that is in place now is between West Branch and Briscoe, El Camino Real. And it is only functional between 4 and 6 every day. And that is a Caltrans function because they control that signal. That signal on West Branch belongs to Caltrans. It does not belong to the city. The city doesn't have anything to do with the way it operates. And that's caused a problem, and I can still see things that could be done there to help traffic, but Caltrans won't go along with it. I've talked to them several times. Now, having said that, part of the problem with synchronization is that it's made to move traffic along 1, 2, 3, or 4 in a straight line. When you try to synchronize, for instance, the people coming out of phase one, turning right onto to the West Branch signal.
You want this, John? Would this help?
When you try to synchronize this function here, coming out of there and into there, it doesn't work because it's not in a straight line like these three signals would be if there were two there. You can synchronize those very efficiently. Synchronization is based on a time sequence. So when you have the portion of the clock that says you want all these, I'm just using this example. Say there was three signals there. They all have a certain amount of time, and any time you have a trip here, then it deducts from this time and adds enough time for this to clear. So you can synchronize signals in a straight line, but when you try to synchronize this traffic coming out of here in with there, doesn't work right. So saying that synchronization for these signals is going to correct it, that's not the way synchronization works. Okay. Say there was a signal there. Now I'm changing subjects now because I'm getting back to one of the questions about the right turn and the, you know, adding that lane. If that lane was added, and they talked about having the straight through and the right turn at the same on the same lane, that's not the best deal to me. The best deal would be the left turn and the straight through on the same lane, and having the right turn being able to turn right on red when there's no traffic over here. Now then, because of the function of the two directions here, you have to do what they call a push-pull. It means that this one, if this one is green, this section here, left and straight through, is red. So by doing that, you have that right turn on red all the time, and it helps clear that stacking on that lane. So but what that does when you do a push-pull, it adds delay on the intersection. So as you try to correct one problem there, you have another, you come up with another problem.
Thank you. Thank you. Anyone else?
Hey, I'm here, and I go to that center probably once a day, unfortunately. I hate to think, oh, got to go back up there again. I like the one-way idea at the Trader Joe's size, phase two, one-way in, one-way out of the center. I think that would really work well. I thought the stacking in the model was completely unbelievably low compared to what a Sunday afternoon looks like. I could be down at St. Pat's School waiting to get up to turn right up there. But if you use that center frequently and you're coming off Halcyon through the Briscoe interchange, what you do, if you're a smart driver, is you play the gas and you decide, if it's going to be red, I'm going to get in the right-hand turn lane, turn right, and then turn left in by Hollywood Video. If you're wise and you got a green, you're going to go straight and turn in at the theaters. One of my recommendations is at the entrance at the theater needs to be more attractive to more drivers. And the way you do that is you take out, the reason it's so attractive coming in where Hollywood Video is because you have a sidewalk and a street, and you don't have to worry about people backing into you. You have safe passage into the center. Where at the theater, you don't have safe passage because you have people parked, if you look along there, right at the West Branch, you have people parked about 25 yards after you've come in off the street that can be backing into you, oftentimes a teenager. So what I think you could do is make a berm there on that first section of parking and make it so once you came in at the theaters, you thought you had safe passage for a while. And that would make it more desirable for more people to use that entrance instead of always coming in. They go that way because it's safe. They don't have to worry about someone. And if you made the theater safer, then it would take some of that congestion off the Hollywood Video side. Because it is quicker if you look at the center and how to use it. So I think making the theater entrance more of a main entrance and making it safer for more people would create. People are going to go to the easiest way. They really are. And once they learn it, they'll use it. And so if we make it better for them, they'll get away from turning right there and they'll go to the easiest way. They're going to go to the quickest, easiest way, and the safest, but they don't want to worry about people backing into them. So you're going to have to get rid of about 8 parking spaces right there.
Well, isn't the safest to just continue another 200 feet and come in at the light where there is already protection?
That's not the quickest, though.
And it's not the quickest. It is the safest.
You want the quickest with the least amount of risk, and if you went in at the theater, that's what you get.
Thank you. Anyone else? Going once? Okay, we'll close the public hearing portion of 9C. Councilmember Arnold, why don't you start us off here?
I do appreciate the input, Colleen, but I would have to say that I would not support that, and the reason being is it is a very pedestrian area there with the theater and such, and so I had actually looked to try to discourage any extra traffic at that location. I think the key to the center is we really do have to focus on the Five Cities Drive, and that was designed to be the way in and out. And because there are alternatives right now, people use those alternatives. But if those alternatives weren't as easy to use as you talk about right now, they would use the Five Cities. I agree. I mean, I've caught myself when I've come from the Briscoe area making that right-hand turn and making the left to go down there, primarily if I'm going to Albertsons, and it's like you're nuts. And I think part of the problem that you have also when you're on West Branch is you have some cars turning right and you have some going straight. And so there is a risk if you go in that left lane and then some of them go straight, then it's hard to get over again. But so I just want to answer that specific. Also, I'll deal with the Steve as far as the one way. I would be real concerned with making it one way for fear that you'd be once again sending more traffic to the movie theater entrance. And I don't think that is the goal here, to solve one problem and create another. And I really am concerned with the movie theater entrance that so many people do use it to get into, because we do have so many popular shops in that one little corner tucked in there. So when I talk about, you know, modifying the behavior, it's got to be figuring out how do we get people to use what are safe entrances and also what could be convenient. I think one of the problems that we have right now with the Camino Mercado is that it is not convenient unless you're going to Walmart. You're not going to use Camino Mercado if you're coming in to Albertsons or to Marshalls or to the gym or to the movie. It's not feasible right now. If there was the shortcut closer to it, I think a lot of people would use that. I cannot separate as much as I would like to, you know, be able to tell you that. And I told you this on the phone. There's no way that I'm going to accept the right-hand turn as mitigation for Wells Fargo. This is a comprehensive plan that we're looking at, and I've seen it before where we've tried to, at planning primarily for us, to try to say, okay, let the experts solve it, and that's how we write that clause, is basically what you're saying. And ultimately, it doesn't work out that way. So I need to see all the alternatives studied before I'm going to say this is the solution that's going to work. I don't know if all my ideas are good ideas or not. But what I do look at is some of the ideas that have been proposed, sandwiched between a retaining wall and a car. And so I didn't like the location there. I think a stop sign would probably make more sense there. If we want to look at a roundabout, possibly down at Camino Mercado and Rancho Parkway, that might make sense, because now you might be encouraging some people that otherwise would have gone straight to maybe get on Camino Mercado and use that as a means to enter the center. Those are the kind of things that I'm talking about when I talk about behavior modification. If all of a sudden there's a reason, if you're on a curve already, well, maybe you're going to continue that turn and make it. If you're just putting a curve in the middle of the road to slow somebody down, a stop sign, I think, would be a lot more efficient and probably safer. One of the things that, could I use your pointer? That I experience this a lot, and it's kind of hard here, but I'm going to show it, is right up here. This is a really poorly designed, this is where you basically come down, you get the four-way stop right here. The way this lines up right here is this is what logic says you would do. You would go down this access road in the parking lot. But what ends up happening is a lot of people obviously come to Hollywood Video right here, but you also have this road right here. Well, you end up with a lot of people. One, it's a very difficult turn. It's very tight here. So you get a lot of queuing right here again. So right now, this is the only way you've got to get out of the center. There is no option. You're not going to go around this way. I will do it only when I know and I did not see it in any of the depictions, when the queue is down here. And it's really easy to tell where the queue is. The queue is not up here when it's busy. The queue is down here. When the movie theater is full, the queue is out here. So realistically, because this is a poor design right here, I think, again, if there was an alternative back here, people might make the decision that it's easier to go this way than to fight this intersection. I don't know if this is a case of, you know, the snapshots aren't accurate, or if it's a case of not living it, but if you live and use this center a lot, these problems are very real. I don't think they're insurmountable, but they all need to be studied. And I think the computer simulation program that you have probably has some value, but it has to be used with all the variables, not with just a hand-selected few. And right now, I haven't seen that. So until we get a comprehensive, we have studied it, I'm not going to make a situation worse. We have an opportunity. We might. I'm going to be hopeful that we have the Investec or the owners or whoever is behind this that says they want to fix it. I'm going to take you at your word and say they actually want to fix it. If they do, then tomorrow all these studies will be being done, and we will look at all the scenarios. That could have probably been done in the last month, and it wasn't done. And since it has to be done before I is going to go forward, and I sounds like it's coming fairly soon, I'm at a loss at why it hasn't already been done. But what I do know is that I will not support a traffic signal unless it is the absolute only solution. And I don't believe it is, considering the fact that we were told in the past that it wasn't a good solution. So I'm really going to struggle with that one. I might want to see it bonded for, since it's going to be a very expensive alternative if we have to get to that point. And so that if we try some other, I think, I'm not sure that any of the other ideas are that expensive, other than possibly the cut on the backside on Camino Mercado. And even that, I can't imagine, is that really expensive solution. But if it works and you don't have to do a traffic signal, then you've saved a lot of money. And so my attitude is these are not separable. I would like to tell you that they are. I think I pretty much made that clear last time, and I can't separate them. We have a problem. We need to fix the problem. If Investec was, or whoever was the good guy, they would have stepped up a year ago and said, let's fix this problem before they had a tenant. So now they have a tenant that we need to hurry up, and we need to do something. And my opinion is, no, we're going to do it right this time. And until we do it right, we're not going to do anything else. And that's all. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Did we ever order any more of these, by the way? Maybe we could have some in the, for the audience when they come in. Councilmember Dickens.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. First of all, I want to thank Mr. Lee for coming out. I find that the simulation program that was provided this evening was helpful. I don't agree with with the way it's depicted 100%, but I do believe that what we're seeing there is helpful to at least get a better picture of what's going on. So I appreciate the application which we have before us, the Wells Fargo application, as compared to the build out of phase two, need to come to the council, and I think that's what we talked about since day one, and we're moving in the right direction. We have some really, I think, some innovative things to look at, I think that I think we're going to get there, but I think that I would have to concur with Councilmember Arnold at this point that we're not there yet, and there's still a lot of questions. The reason why I asked the question about the applicant is because I think it gets confusing.
The applicant is not Wells Fargo. The applicant before us is Investec or Agra, whoever is hiring you folks to bring this this forth. And the reason why I want to make that clear is because the applicant for the CUP in Building J and the future Pad I are actually the same person. And so we're not asking Wells Fargo to do something over and above. We're asking the applicant to look at both the conditional use permit that's being brought here before us this evening and looking at it, stepping back and saying, okay, we know that's something that you guys want to do, but we can't evaluate that based on the information we have yet without also looking at Pad I, because Pad I is going to be very instrumental in creating, I think, some very significant traffic impacts to this particular area, and how that's all going to lay out is critical. We don't want to move forward with doing improvements and then have to find out, well, those aren't really going to work and we need to make some additional adjustments. And I don't think that the applicant wants to do that. What we have before us, I think, is a great start. I think that we do need to look at the overall circulation. What I'd like to see come back before us is a simulation, and I think we're moving in the right direction with this, as to the full build-out of Phase 2 and modeling those particular scenarios in relations to the intersections. I think there's still questions about whether the signal's actually going to function. I think that John Keane brought up some very interesting points, and for someone who works in the industry, I think that's to me that says a lot. So I think at this point, what I've been saying since the first public hearing is that we need to see some improvements in this particular stretch between Phase 1 and Phase 2, and I think we're moving in the right direction. But what I see before us this evening is really a phased approach that then looks at the possibility of a signalization, or the possibility of doing a roundabout, a possibility of doing lots of different things to then address Pad I, and that's not what we've been asking for since the first public hearing. So I'm unable to move forward at this point with this particular application. Thank you.
Councilmember Guthrie?
I guess I'll start with some general comments. The first has to do with the simulations. I mean, And I think that the thing to keep in mind is, even though they look real functional here, and it is very helpful to see these, that we have to remember that the bottom line is, in the end, they were level of service DNF that we were observing here. And even though it looks like everything flows pretty smoothly, we all know from our experience at Briscoe and from our experience at this intersection that that's really not an acceptable situation. I say that partly because one of the very first decisions I made on Planning Commission involved a project, Camino Mercado and Branch, and we got one of these reports. I went out and said, well, this doesn't make sense to me. I've waited in this for a whole lot more than 22 seconds, and went out and just did my own 15-minute traffic analysis and came away realizing that, you know, if you have five cars waiting 30 seconds to make a left turn, and there's 10 cars making a right turn without any wait at all, that the average is only 15 seconds. And I think that's the one thing to keep in mind when we look at these simulations, that they don't depict what might really be happening at any given, you know, at one segment of the intersection, and they certainly don't give an accurate depiction of what happens at times. That you know, it's an average that, you know, every so often four cars, but there are times when there's eight and nine cars that build up in these. And the reason I kind of lead into that is I don't think that we can necessarily predict what's going to happen once Wells Fargo opens, whether everybody, particularly because Wells Fargo would be used by a regular user. And this is somebody who would come into this shopping center often, would evaluate the situation, would actually very likely take the north entrance based on what they thought the south entrance was, which then would probably reduce the level of service at Phase 1 because we would have more of this through traffic coming through. I just think it's very hard for us to predict exactly what's going to take place here. But in exchange, we're getting an increase in capacity on Phase 1. I'm certainly open to being convinced that there's some long-run solution here that we can hold out for, but I'm not convinced that we're not just going to face a retail use here that creates this problem and we don't, in fact, get the improvement. Looking down the road, I have to echo Ed's comments. The answer here is, in fact, to move the activity away from this intersection completely and down to the main intersection. It really, in fact, the reason I asked the question about the island on Branch is I was hoping there was an island there because that would stop the left turn in and out by the theater. It's really key that the theater remains relatively uncongested. You start pumping a bunch of traffic down there, you're going to run people over. And the theater is always going to have a lot of pedestrian activity. So I think that there are probably ways of looking at altering that pattern so that you actually can't drive through there and get all the way to the Albertsons and to the Walmart section, that you'd end up going out of your way to do that and therefore would go the extra 200 feet to get in the main entrance where we already have a light, where we already have four lanes. So I think that's something that in the long run is in fact the solution. I also think that there's a little bit here. We actually are going to add a service that's not available on the east side currently at all, which is an additional banking service. And I think it's arguable how much effect it would have on Briscoe Halcyon there. But in fact, it would be some fewer people that in fact would be driving underneath the freeway there at Briscoe in order to get their banking services, which are now available on the east side of the freeway. So I really do think we should factor that in. I don't think it's a huge factor, but I do think we should factor that in as well. So I could support tonight moving forward with allowing the conversion of the retail use to a commercial use and allowing the Wells Fargo to go forward with the addition of the right-hand turn lane out of Phase 1 and the increase in capacity improvement of that traffic element at this time that we would have today and not have to wait until the future for. The traffic, I just think the traffic circle is a bad idea. If it was the 10th traffic circle we had in the area, maybe it would make some sense. People would be used to traffic circles. But if that's the first traffic circle we do in this area, it'll be the last traffic circle we do in this area. And I think they have great value, but I'd sure hate to give them up in the future. So I kind of count the votes here, realize I'm in the minority here, but I do think I can support going forward with the improvement and the change in use. Thank you.
Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm going to try not to echo everything that people have said before, but I do want to put my thoughts out here. First of all, I think we're looking at three different issues here, and we're only here to decide one of them. The first issue is that we have a regional shopping center that's operating the levels of service that are far below what they should be. Because when the original planning was done, the numbers were underestimated, and the mitigations that we put in place are not adequate. So we start from that. Second issue is we're looking at conversion, and the issue that we're looking at tonight is the conditional use permit to permit a non-retail use in a retail-oriented building. The third issue, then, is the overall behavior of the people that are going to use this center. So if we go back to the existing, there are a lot of problems, and I know that I'll echo what Councilman Arnold was saying. This is very poorly designed in terms of the use of this building. The flow through here, I think this is critical. This should not be the way people come to enter to get to Albertsons. There is a tremendous amount of foot traffic in here for the theater, and it's always going to be there. I think the main entrance over here is actually where most traffic should come. People that are coming up Branch Street, though, are going to turn right there and come up here and go in here.
Excuse me, Joe. Do we have a better picture where we can get
the main entrance?
Yeah, get the main entrance in there. Picture of the site plan. Yeah, that's we can blow that one up a little bit. Oh, that cuts out. There you go. If you can.
Just
blow that up.
In. Okay, that's fine.
Where's phase two?
Phase two is right here.
Oh.
This is phase two. This is the intersection we're talking about right here.
Okay.
This needs to remain. Go ahead, Doc. I promise I won't put your eye out. Any improvements that we make for this conditional use permit have to fit with whatever the long-term solutions are going to be. I don't see any solutions today that do that to my satisfaction. I see solutions that are proposed that may well be improvements, but are not necessarily in the long term going to be improvements. I want to know if we end up with an intersection here with a traffic light that it's going to work. Whether it can be timed correctly or not, as Commissioner Keynes pointed out, remains to be seen. But if we put a traffic light at this intersection, what's it going to do to the traffic that comes up here, turns, and stacks up? And this is, I've always had a problem with the level of service studies and traffic analyses from the time I spent on the Planning Commission as well as now on the Council. It almost seems intuitively like we look at an intersection and it's a level of service C, but I've been there many times and my experience is not level of service C. Going back to, again, what Councilman Guthrie was saying is that you can go to an intersection and sit there and wait for 45 seconds, and your experience is 1 in 4, whereas 3 of the other 4 cars are only waiting 10 seconds. So when you average it out over the full hour, even if it's the worst hour of the day, the average level of service at that intersection is an acceptable level C. Whereas for a significant proportion of the people going through that intersection, it's not a level C. So I have real problems with that. I appreciate very much the commuter studies you did tonight, and I find them to be very useful. We've seen them before when we were looking over at the intersection over by the high school, and they make a lot of sense there, too. I just question whether the data in them is complete. I want to know, what will people's reaction be? How will people's behavior change once there is a functioning bank in this facility? As was pointed out, some people no longer will go to the east side, go to the west side of the freeway to get to that bank. However, more people that use the center may decide that they're going to use the bank. And I'm sure Wells Fargo will be very happy that they get 30% increase in accounts because people will say, oh, I can use the bank that's here now. They may increase their business. That will also increase the number of trips that are here. That may well increase the number of trips that go from phase one to phase two, even more than we're seeing projected. And we've seen projections be way off. We saw 4,000, I think it was 4,000 out of 15,000, so almost 30% more traffic than we expected to be there. So I'm not completely convinced that the solutions I see are going to be adequate. If I could feel confident they would be, I'd approve it, but I can't. I think the right turn lane may well be a solution that comes into play here, and I guess going intuitively here, I see this as a one-way in here, but this is both directions in and out. I don't know if we have a traffic light here or not, but I think we do end up with a stop sign or something up here to slow people down coming down the hill to get to this intersection to regulate the speed of traffic as it approaches here. We may end up seeing the entrance back here, as was proposed by Councilman Arnold. All of these things have to be resolved. And unfortunately, I think they have to be resolved before we make a final decision on the applicant for here, because any mitigation for this, for the conditional use permit, has to tie into the overall picture, and I don't see that. So at this point, Mr. Mayor, I can't support going forward.
Thank you. Well, let me start big picture and then sort of work in. And I learned something from you, Commissioner Keene, tonight. You explained to me how I almost got rear-ended on the number 2 lane of southbound 101. There's a state agency involved. So I had forgotten about the ownership issue of those signals in and around that whole network of signals that was proposed to be, quote, synchronized as a mitigation measure for this center. We talk about that for a moment. As I recall, I think maybe Mr. Oros might remember this, but when the council originally issued their statement of overriding considerations on the traffic issue in particular, I think it was largely due to the fact that there were going to be in lieu fees paid. There were going to be signals installed. The signals would be synchronized, and I believe, as OmniMeans indicated, even with that, the situation was going to continue to get worse without a fix to the overpass or the underpass or whatever you want to call it. Is that correct?
Yes.
And so anyway, it isn't good news. Route 101 Briscoe interchanges all the way to Grand Avenue. Projected cost estimate $17,266,000. Planning horizon is now midterm, 10 to 14 years before we see anything happening at Briscoe House Inn. That's the new news. The other bad news, Burns in the audience, is that El Campo fell completely off of the scope officially, outside of the Vision 2025 study. So that's what we're looking at, or I should say that's not what we can anticipate is a fix to our most problematic intersections in any time soon. We're going to have to live with what we have. More appropriately, we're going to have to live with what has been created here. So when we look at, I took a note when Councilmember Guthrie made his statement. I'm finding it difficult, and maybe it's just me, and maybe I'm not seeing it, but I'm finding it difficult to make a correlation with this right-hand turn and anything that we put into Building J over here. I can understand it alleviating and maybe improving circulation over here, but I'm finding some difficulty with the cross-traffic issue as it relates to Building J. The other bottom line, if we wanted to separate the three issues that the Mayor Pro Tem indicated this evening, if hypothetically we were to move forward with this, if there was a direct impact on a right-hand turn lane here, in my mind, I wouldn't do it for a bank. When it comes right down to it, I wouldn't do it for a bank. If we're going to suffer this pain, I at least want to get something out of it. So if I'm going to move forward with any kind of a mitigation, I'm going to do it for a retail establishment, not a bank. I'm going to do it with something that's going to at least give us some form of a payback in the form of sales tax. I can't see us making that kind of a leap of faith for absolutely no return from the occupancy of Building J. In my mind, if AGRA wanted to act in good faith, the owners of the shopping center, they would take a look at some of the issues that Councilmember Arnold raised about the comprehensive behavior of circulation in the shopping center, and they would, on their own, try and make this center behave from a circulation standpoint more effectively and efficiently than it is now. In my mind, I think without bonding, without conditions, this shopping center should be studied and with a view towards the fact that it's ultimately going to be filled out. There's going to be additional intensity of use. So how can we make it work better than it is today? If it were up to me and I could wave a magic wand, I would tell AGRA, before we do anything, put that right turn lane in anyway. Before we do anything, let's go back and re-examine the impact of a another ingress-egress behind the row of stores here. And by the way, the more I think of it, when we start talking about the main traffic corridors, and in my mind there's three of them, well, there's actually two, but one is two-directional, multi-directional, and that's West Branch coming from Oak Park and Branch coming under the freeway at Briscoe, and then Rancho Parkway, which is the main thoroughfare. I like the idea of looking at potentially, if we're going to look at some form of a traffic circle, take it out of the intersection at the mouth of an ingress-egress to a residential area. I agree with the who made the statement about it being first and last. That was you. Okay, well put. But I would like to see some form of a study if we were to position a some form of a traffic circle or up at Camino Mercado. If we were to do that and then back up on Rancho Parkway, that's something that I think all of us appreciate being able to study. That's the good side. The downside is that what I saw up here today, in my mind, doesn't reflect reality. It isn't a good depiction of the actual behavior of the traffic flow. The reference that I'd like to make is the model that we saw tonight in comparison to the one that we saw, and I'm trying to remember, I think it was Mayor Pro Tem mentioned, the one that we saw Caltrans use on Fair Oaks when they modeled the off-ramp. They ran that thing real time to include running the signal cycles, because we were looking at the potential of signaling along Fair Oaks. And they ran those signals real time to show the actual queuing that would occur. In other words, they stopped traffic on Fair Oaks at a certain intersection for as long as a signal cycle would actually go, and we saw the end results. It was the law of physics, you know, equal and opposite reaction. We couldn't make that thing work, no matter how hard they tried to model it. When you use actual times and actual traffic flows, we didn't have much luck there, which is why it's pretty much still the same way it is, not to mention the funding aspects. So I would, when we come back to this, I applaud the use of the model. But if you're going to show it to us, show us the way it's actually going to behave. If you're going to put a signal up there and you're going to model it with animation, then let it run its cycle so we can see exactly how it's going to behave. Well, I think it's pretty clear. I think it would be irresponsible of us at this point to, number one, try and separate Wells Fargo or any other addition to Building J and Pad I. I thought we had made that point pretty clear in previous meetings. I'm hoping it's clear now. I like the idea of, and Steve, if you've had experience at South Coast Plaza, that's a heck of a lot of experience, especially down there. And if OmniMeans has had similar experience in other shopping centers, looking at ways in which we can better manage circulation, I think that was one of the issues that I think when Carol and I first talked, that it was something that I, you know, was hoping the applicant would be open to. So we've come full circle, and I'm going to have to agree, at least with the majority of the council, that I'm not even close to being comfortable with moving forward with this. And just for the record, if we get pushed into a situation where we're gonna settle on a mitigation measure that is questionable, I'm not about to do it for something that doesn't generate retail sales tax. I mean, if this is going to be painful, I want to get paid for it, is the bottom line, for me at least. So those are my comments. Anything else?
Mr. Mayor, if I could just kind of clarify my position here real quick. And that I just want to make the distinction that, in fact, it's my understanding that, in fact, a retail use could go in here tomorrow. We would get paid. We would receive some sales tax. But, in fact, no mitigation would be required. So that we would have money that would come into the general fund, but there's absolutely no nexus between that money necessarily ever being spent to develop more capacity. Whereas in this particular scenario, and I understand there's lots of room for disagreement, in this particular scenario, we actually would have an actual increase in capacity, even though it only improves phase one, but it does not improve phase two, where, in fact, we're getting the impact, we still would have an overall improvement.
Well, if that were the case, whose fault is that? It's our fault. If we're going to require an improvement for a non-retail generating business, then we should require an improvement for a retail generating business. It gets back to, you can put the same condition on anything that goes into PAD, into Building J.
Okay. I wonder if staff could clarify that, because that's exactly my question was. I'm open to being convinced that if that were the case, if we could, in fact, require the same medication in the future of a retail use, then, yeah, I could see waiting, but I don't believe that's the case. So I'm open to being convinced of that by someone.
Well, if that's not the case, then I think the only people we have to blame is ourselves.
Well, it's a done deal.
Did you want me to respond to any of that?
Sure. Please.
Yeah, but the what's being proposed is a description.
Circumstances and some basic misconceptions, misunderstandings that I'm not sure I would not particularly advocate that statement. I think there are some empirical data that's in the record now that could be used to address some of the deficiencies that are clearly noted by everyone, including the applicant, on the record. So I don't think the entire center could be built out in its original configuration now in light of what we know. I think with regard to the single 4,000-square-foot retail use, that may be true. I don't know that I'd go beyond that, though.
Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, can I make a comment then, too?
Sure, go ahead.
I would say it would be in very bad faith and probably a bad idea to propose retail in the existing building with the thought of not trying to mitigate the existing conditions, considering they're known, with the thought that there was ever plans to build on Pad I then. That'd be at least my thoughts. Thank you.
Anything else? Okay. If not, we'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor, I would move that we deny the conditional use permit applied for by Wells Fargo Bank, located at 911 Rancho Parkway, Five City Shopping Center, Phase 2 at this time.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion?
As a matter of clarification, was that with direction to staff to come back with a supporting resolution for the denial? I think that's what the full recommendation says, and we would benefit by having something in the record.
Okay, well, I will amend that to request staff to come back with full language on that. I'd also state that so long as this issue remains tied to the traffic issue, we're going to need to see whatever mitigation comes forward for a conditional use permit like this needs to remain in harmony with whatever long-term alterations need to be made to the traffic and circulation here. Is that too complicated?
We may want to separate the two thoughts, the direction to staff to take for the council to take tentative action and direct staff to return with the supporting resolution, and then separate the second part of that motion.
I would like to separate the second part out then. Let's remove that from my motion at this time.
Okay. We got that straight? All right. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? If not, roll call.
Mayor Pro Tem Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
No.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes.
I guess I'd like to also direct staff, and I'm not sure how I make this motion, direct staff that any conditional use permit that comes forward for changes to the existing Pad J building should include considerations for how any traffic improvements or traffic mitigations for that improvement will fit in with any long-term improvements for the center as a whole.
Okay, motion and a second. Discussion?
Mr. Mayor, if I may, just to, for clarification's sake, I think that what, if I'm hearing your motion correctly, what I'm hoping to direct staff through this motion is to make sure that when a proposal does come back, whether it is an additional conditional use permit or a configuration of Pad I, which are probably the two things that are going to come before us in the near future, that that we're really addressing, as I believe it's been the council's direction, a full circulation study of both Phase 1 and Phase 2 and how the center will operate from a circulation standpoint. Is that what I'm hearing
That's
you say?
Exactly what I mean.
Okay.
By the center as a whole, I mean Phase 1 and Phase 2.
Okay. We have that? Second still hold? Any other discussion?
Are we asking staff to come back with the study, or are we just as a general comment making that in the future any discussion of traffic in this
is, as was pointed out by staff, is if another conditional use permit were to come before us on the build out of building J and or the new configuration of Pad I. Those are the only two things that are going to be coming back to this council. And what I'm trying to state is at that particular time, it would be important, I think, what I'm hearing the council say, is that we just clarify with staff that that should include a comprehensive traffic analysis of the entire shopping center, which has, I believe, been consistent since the time we started this. And that's not what we have before us this evening. So
That's correct.
And that does not preclude the applicant from moving forward with doing many of these improvements on their own.
Absolutely. And it also would tend to me, to, from the language that council has given us, that were the applicant to come forward with plans to develop Pad I as it was originally intended, there are enough mitigating factors in play and enough on the record already to state that that cannot simply come forward without some sort of consideration for traffic changes as they exist now.
All right. I'm trying to separate comment from motion here.
Well, it was discussion on the motion.
So, is the original motion with that clarification on the record still okay? Okay. Then we have a motion and a second. Is there any other discussion? You might have to listen to the tape here a couple times. All right. Roll call, please.
Mayor Pro Tem Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
And Mayor Farrar?
Yes. Okay, thank you. That takes us just about there.
Okay. Push on.
Okay, that takes us to item 10, continued business. There is none. New business, none. Item 12, council member items. Very quickly, gentlemen in front of you, you have this information packet on formula business restrictions. What I'm asking for is staff to review this information, come back with a staff report, have this put on the agenda. This is in response to comments that were made during the community comments and suggestions at the last council meeting from Gary Andrini, concerns about the Village Center. This is pretty informative stuff about how we may well have some additional tools to ensure that we continue to maintain the, how shall I say, the historic, quaint individual business ownership aspect of the village. Other jurisdictions have used formula business restrictions. This material is pretty self-explanatory. I didn't want to go into great detail. The only thing that I'm asking tonight is that council support this coming back as an agenda item. Comments?
I'd very much like to see this come back as an agendized item, and it merits further discussion and study.
Ditto.
I also agree completely that this would be a very useful tool for the village.
I'm good.
I agree as well.
Okay. So, consensus? That's all you need? Thank you. That takes us to item 13, city manager items.
Thank you. One item, we are close, I think, to confirming our joint meeting with the Traffic Commission and Planning Commission for Monday at, I think, 6:30. There's still a couple individuals need to confirm with, but I believe we're about set. The feedback I wanted to get while we have everybody together is just on the location. If you'd like to have it here, I think we can accommodate it. The logistics are a little more difficult, but you're able to televise it live. The other option is the Women's Club Community Center, where it's a little easier to set up. But you have to, if you want to televise it, we'd have to tape and replay it. So there's some pros and cons of either places. We could work it out either way. It's just whatever your preference is.
I'll do it here.
Okay.
It'll be a little crowded, but we can, we might be able to make it work.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was
Sponsored and conducted by the Postal Service themselves.
Okay, thank you. That takes us to item 16. This is our final community comments and suggestions. Any member of the audience that would like to come forward and comment on any topic, this would be an opportunity to do so. No? Okay. Close our final community comments. That takes us to 17. Motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Thank you.